Did you know Fast Growing Trees is the biggest online nursery in the U.S. with more than 10,000 different kinds of plants and over 2 million happy customers in the U.S.? They have everything you could possibly want, like fruit trees, palm trees, evergreens, houseplants, and so much more. Whatever you're interested in, they have it for you. Find the perfect fit for your climate and space. Fast Growing Trees makes it easy to order online, and your plants are shipped directly to your door in 1 to 2 days. And along with their 30-day Alive and Thrive guarantee, they offer free plant consultation forever. This spring, they have the best deals online, up to half off on select plants and other deals. And listeners to our show get an additional 15% off their first purchase when using the code POOL at checkout. That's an additional 15% off at fastgrowingtrees.com using the code POOL at checkout. Fastgrowingtrees.com, code POOL. Offer is valid for a limited time. Terms and conditions may apply. Ladies and gentlemen, we are here in Nashville, Tennessee. We are at the Daily Wire's headquarters. And we got a special show tonight. There's a lot to talk about. Of course, D.C. is experiencing busloads of illegal immigrants being sent by the governor of Texas. We've got some interesting conversations around these schools. And the education issue, once again, has become something, it's persistent in the news. And we're going to talk about that. We've got a couple really great guests. In about 15 minutes, The Daily Wire, Ben Shapiro, Andrew Klavan, Michael Knowles, Matt Walsh, Jeremy Boring, I hope I named everybody.
How's everybody?
Are going to be taking over our feed, actually taking over, and Tim Castiro will flip into The Daily Wire, and I'm going to run out of the trailer in tornado weather,
yes,
no joke, and try and make it into their studio, and we're all going to hang out and have a conversation that'll last for just about 15 minutes. Then we're going to come back and hang out with our awesome guests and keep our show going. So I saw those people chatting saying there's no way Ben Shapiro and the Daily Wire crew are taking over. Yes, they literally are. They've got special camera rigs set up to just take over. It's going to be a blast.
Oh, yeah.
I hope it works. Mm-hmm. But it's been really fun hanging out with the guys here in Nashville. The crew, they're awesome. I just got to play some video games with them and absolutely destroyed the entire crew of the Daily Wire because they don't know how to play video games. So let's just get to it. Joining us today, we got a couple really awesome guests. We got Jason Whitlock
from the Blaze TV, Fearless with Jason Whitlock. Good to be back. It's probably been a year.
Yeah, since I think so.
I was on the show. You know, I'm still fat, but a little less so. Although no one said anything to me, I was hoping that Tim or Liddy or somebody would say, "Hey, man, I think you lost 10 pounds.
Well, I was thinking it.
Yeah, I
still
want to
be
too,
rude.
Yeah.
You know? I lost some weight, too. You
know? Yeah. We're all
you
doing
did?
That. Yeah.
I can see that.
Cut out the sugars in like around October, November.
Mm-hmm.
It's worked out pretty well.
You're still wearing the hat, though, so that kind of threw me off.
Good.
I couldn't see the
got
weight loss.
It's the constant, yeah.
We got Colin Wright.
Evolutionary biologist, run the website Reality's Last Stand. I talk a lot about sex and gender, debunking a lot of the pseudoscience about biological sex and the notion that it's a social construct or a spectrum. It's good to be here. Thank you.
Thanks for coming. We got Ian.
What's up, everybody? I was actually sitting in the Daily Wire production headquarters eyeballing the way they run, and man, that is a cool operation. Mm-hmm. Great group of people in there, and they're a well-oiled machine.
Isn't it so different from us?
We've got
duct tape and beanies, and they've got this massive production rig. There's like 50 people running around. I'm like, I don't know what any of these people
truly
do.
Truly epic.
Like Lydia presses buttons.
That's right.
Lydia,
I'm here in the corner pushing buttons. This time I got Ian's camera right, which has been a struggle for me. You guys may have noticed. I don't know what I have against Ian's camera, but it's not because I hate Ian. I'm just struggling over here in the corner with all these new camera
the wrong ones.
I know, I can't get it.
Can I say this? I think I like this RV.
It's great.
Better than going to your compound.
Oh, yeah?
Which I had trouble finding. And I remember, I think I had to order McDonald's because you guys fed me Hot Pockets.
Who gave you Hot Pockets?
I don't know. No, what? I don't remember. Whatever. I reject these allegations.
It's very homey
we'll
in here.
We'll have to do better.
Yeah, I know.
I do love it. You know, the idea is maybe once a month, bring the trailer out to a different location. And we're actually, we want to do Friday night live events. So we would do IRL at a venue on stage. We got to hire the people to get to that point who can come out on a Wednesday, set the whole thing up early on the Friday, and then we would do the show in the trailer, but then Friday night, sell tickets. People can come out, hang out in the audience, and actually watch the show. I think that'd be really cool.
Be awesome. That sounds awesome.
All right, well, let's try and squeeze in some talk before the Daily Wire ends up taking this show over. Before we get started, head over to timcast.com. Become a member to help support our work. We're going to have an amazing members-only segment coming up tonight at 11 p.m. Eastern. As a member, you'll get access to the entire library of our members-only content, and you'll also be supporting our journalists. But more importantly, head over to youtube.com/popculturecrisis and subscribe to our mostly apolitical culture show. This is why. If you're into it, if you like talk about celebrities, movies, video games, gossip, and all that stuff, we can't just complain about cultural changes. We can't just complain about political issues. Politics is downstream from culture. We have to engage in these cultural issues if we care about it, and we have to make culture. So not only are we working on shows like Tales from the Inverted World, which is a seasonal mystery paranormal investigative podcast, we're also engaging with talking about celebrities and movies and games too. And that's what the crew over at Pop Culture Crisis does every day. So subscribe there if you want to hear more about that stuff. And you'll know that when we talk about what's going on with the latest movie or Disney, it's going to be coming from a place of our values, personal responsibility, liberty, etc. Let's talk about this first story. It's a crazy story, but I don't want to go hard on deep cultural issues because we're gonna lose control of the feed in about 10 minutes. So this is from timcast.com. First Texas bus drops off illegal immigrants in Washington, D.C. The convoy is part of Texas Governor Greg Abbott's push to secure the southern border and stem the flow of illegal immigration from Central America. So basically what happens is Joe Biden's administration starts sending illegal immigrants to communities in Texas. People get really upset by this for obvious reasons. He's been doing it all over the country, even in the dead of night. The governor of Texas said, okay, I'll tell you what. You want to do that here? I'm going to send these people to D.C. Jen Psaki calls it a publicity stunt. Then he actually does it.
Mm.
Ron DeSantis says he's going to do the same thing, but send them up to Delaware.
Boom! That was going to be it. That's where they need to send them.
Exactly. Delaware. It's not perfect, right? Sending people to Delaware will just make people in Delaware upset.
Mm.
But the point is like, hey, Biden's the one who's doing it, so why don't you guys get a taste? Here's the thing. I'd be willing to believe that Biden's already sending illegal immigrants to Delaware and other states. They're all over the country. So... Well, I don't know if you guys have thoughts on this, because... Well,
I'm curious of the process. Do they just take them on a bus and pull up to a street and they just tell them to scatter? Where are they getting dropped off at?
My understanding is they actually just walked them off the bus and said, have a nice day.
Whoa.
Yep.
That's wild.
And yeah.
The people have all agreed to go on the bus, I believe, yes. Too. This is only people that have acquiesced.
Right.
They have agreed to go on the bus.
So I wonder if that'll end up being an endless supply of people. Or will they run out of? Because it can't just be a one-off. Because it is, you know, Jen Psaki, if this is just a one-off publicity stunt, you get headlines. But if there's a steady stream of them being dropped off in Delaware and in Washington, D.C., and you can keep that drumbeat going and people start experiencing what, you know, has happened to these states that are on the Mexican border, if you can start really feeling that experience in D.C. and in Delaware and other places, Biden and these guys are going to have to react. Our immigration deal just is the most bizarre. It's not the most bizarre because we get so many bizarre things going on, but
one of
it's
them.
In the top 10.
We'll get to them all, I'm sure.
What is the Delaware? What's so hot about Delaware being a destination?
That's Joe Biden's state.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah. Send him to his home. Send him to his home state.
I see. Getting him in the guts.
There's an article from the Daily Beast where they said it's xenophobic for the Republicans to do this.
What?
And I'm just like, well, hold on. Joe Biden is sending these people by force on buses to Texas. Greg Abbott is asking them if they want to get on a bus to go to D.C. So is not what Joe Biden doing xenophobic? This is the game we've been talking about a lot, but it happens, the double standard. It's an endless conversation every day about the double standard between what the administration, the Democrats, the establishment are allowed to do, always defended, and anybody who counters in any way is accused of all of the worst far right whatever.
I think they would perhaps prefer to be in D.C. as well. It'd be easier to get your free cell phones mm-hmm. right there in D.C. There's probably a direct connect. They probably got a deal set up with Cricket or somebody to get these people the free cell phones they were promised.
I don't I don't think it's fair to call him xenophobic, personally. I just looked up the definition. One, unduly fearful of what is foreign, and especially of people or foreign origins. So being unduly fearful of what is foreign, it's not that I think a lot of this isn't coming from fear of foreigner. It's that you disrupt the local economy when you import people that don't understand the culture or speak the language. And you got to be really careful about disrupting your economy. The United States is very young. It hasn't experienced a large immigration that completely altered the government. Like when people come in slowly and then all of a sudden they're the ones that start to get there. They happened to the Roman Empire. I mean, it's the way the Roman Empire fell, really, is the barbarians from the north or whatever. They came in over hundreds of years and then now they're the government. And then it's no longer.
I don't know if I believe in hyper xenophobia, but I am probably xenophobic because I want people that share my values in this country. Mm. I want people that believe in freedom as the ultimate prize, not entitlement as the ultimate prize or victimization as the ultimate prize. And again, I don't know the people flooding our borders and immigrating illegally. Maybe they do believe in American freedom. Maybe that's why they're coming here. But I don't think that's what the Democrats and the people leading our immigration policy, I don't think those are the values they want them to have.
I don't think you're xenophobic. You know, they use these phobia words to make you sound unreasonable. Mm-hmm. And if you're just saying, I'm not scared of people from Central South America, or you even have people from Africa coming in. I'm not scared of any of these people. In fact, I know some people, and they're good people, I hear. You know, Trump said some of them are good people, right? Mm. No, the reality is they want what a lot of people want, opportunity in America. In fact, I have more respect for them and their desires than I do for many of these woke people in this country. There's one thing I am worried about is the woke people. But the issue of xenophobia, that's a ridiculous term. It's meant to obfuscate the real conversation. The real conversation is there are economic limits to what you can do with people just coming across whenever they want. You end up strangling the labor market. You end up flooding the labor market. Supply and demand takes effect, and then people's wages get depressed. There's challenges there. And then, as you pointed out, there are a lot of people here who want to be here. And again, I do respect that desire to be in America because I know how much this country rocks. But if they don't understand our Constitution, if they don't understand our values, then it dilutes our values and the things that made this country great. So if there's somebody who says, guys, here's the recipe for a great cake, and then you say, we're going to let 10 more bakers in who don't know how to bake it, but they're going to be involved, well, then things are going to get a little wishy-washy. That's why my attitude is always like, let everybody come. Everybody can come, but they got to wait in line like normal and go through a standard process. That way we can make sure the recipe doesn't get disrupted, but we can have more cooks in the kitchen just as long as everybody's following the rules and we all agree on how it's supposed to go. It's not fear. It's actually, I would consider it to be more compassionate so that you can make sure people can thrive and that you're not just throwing them into the middle of a desert where these kids are dying of dehydration.
I think you're talking about just being responsible. And it's no different than who you would allow into your home, particularly if you got kids, wife, husband, whatever. You want to be a responsible homeowner. And so you just don't let any and everybody into your home. That's the way I feel about America.
You see these stories of the refugee crisis. And a lot of people are like, you know, are you going to let some of these refugees into your houses? Many of these left activists who were very much like, yeah, we got to let all the refugees in, would not offer up any of their homes. Now, I do personally know left-wing woke activists who did. And it was great success. And I'm like, that's amazing that you had the resources, you had a plan, you were capable to do this. Not everybody is. Asking a middle-class family who's just scraping by paycheck to paycheck to open their doors to somebody, that's what you're doing when you're like, let's have open borders. Let's allow all these people to come in. Yeah, I get it. You guys might be in big cities with a higher cost of standard of living, a higher cost of living. You have more money. But the poor working class people who are paycheck to paycheck, it's straining their lives. And that's not okay, right? You gotta respect the working class people.
It's that whole concept of like the luxury belief where you can have these beliefs because you're not really incurring the cost directly. You're sort of exporting those costs to those around you who are taking the brunt of the policies you advocate for. Like the people who are most likely to say something like, you know, abolish the police, they tend to be like upper class white people who have probably live in gated communities. These aren't the people who are dealing in these cities, these areas where there's high crime. So it's really easy for someone like that to say, you know, these platitudes that really sound good, that sort of give them this credit to the people around them. Because, again, they're not incurring these costs. The guy named Rob Henderson, he coined that term.
I want to add, too, just to back to the conversation about the buses. Bringing illegal immigrants into these areas just does exactly what Democrats were hoping was going to happen anyway, that you're going to increase the population of a district, which results in a larger in the census, resulting in a larger population after the census. And then they'll get more congressional seats, more electoral seats. So, yeah, send them to D.C. Send them, you know, D.C. maybe makes sense because they don't get representation. Mm-hmm. Sending people to Delaware just gives Delaware more congressional power and more electoral votes. So the real issue is, you know, people should be welcome to this country with open arms through a legal process that makes sure they thrive. And so do we. But I think the main issue is people on the left, they're not having kids. So they need to find ways that in the next 20 years, they will still have voting power. And that's by bringing in new people who have a tendency to vote for Democratic policies and Democratic politicians. Conservatives have kids. Liberals don't. So liberals need to go to the schools to get your kids in line with their views so they can get conservative kids on their side, or they need to bring people in who will side with them.
Reminds me of a Netflix documentary that I watched called Wild Wild Country. It's about Portland, or an area in Oregon, not Portland, but an area in Oregon that was taken over by this Indian Hindu, Nosha, he was basically a sex guru or whatever. And they start literally to gain voting power and to take over this section of Oregon. They started recruiting. This happened in the '70s. This is like a real life story. They started busing in people from Los Angeles, homeless people, into this area so they could change the voting demographics in Oregon so they could take over more. And it ended up the homeless people were on drugs and so many of them violent, and they actually turned on the people that brought them there because their needs weren't getting met. It's one of the best, greatest documentaries I've ever seen because it happened in the '70s and explains everything that's going on today.
It takes time, and they're willing to invest the time. So if someone who is 8 years old today gets indoctrinated in a school, they're voting in 10 years. So it's a long game. We can't think in short-term cycles like 2 and 4 years. You got to think ahead. You got to think 10, 20 years. Someone born today, more likely to be conservative because of just standard demographics of conservatives having kids, liberals not, and also having abortions. So you got 18 years until conservatives get that advantage. How do you counter that? They know this. They play the long game. Conservatives, I think, you know, politically minded, politically careered, are probably thinking about this on the conservative side. I think regular people miss this. You know, they don't understand necessarily why the schools do what they do when they go after kids.
A lot of what the left is doing seems desperate to me, and it makes me think that they think they only have a limited amount of time to execute their plan before the whole thing collapses in on them.
Yeah, I was thinking, how much of it is desperation? How much of it is instinct? Like, it seems like humans have an instinct to parent. I don't know. I do. I don't know if you guys do. I feel like I just love kids. I wanted to help kids. And so I was like, well, if I never actually have kids, what's reproduction? If I make a bunch of videos and there's a bunch of copies of it, then I'm forming some sort of reproduction that will affect society. And maybe I can help the children that way. Very leftist mentality. You know, it's very much like what we've seen now. And I wonder if it's just like they really want to help, but they're so twisted that they're trying to help by, you know, infusing these specific ideals. Or if they actually want to hurt people. I'm not getting the vibe that they want to hurt people. It just seems more like a communist...
they want power.
Mental shift that's like taking hold of these people or something. I don't know if communist is the right word.
They want power, and they're not afraid to inflict collateral damage on people to get it. I think that's true of anyone, you know. But I think there's a tendency, what we see with the establishment, the Democratic Party, and even the uniparty Republican types... What's happened is there's been a populist uprising also on the left. I think a lot of the Bernie people, many of them moved over. 9 million Obama voters moved over, voted for Trump. It's really just about populism. We had Steve Bannon saying he was far right. And then he says tax the rich. And I'm like, I don't know if that's far right, dude. I think that's actually a left position, but it's just a populist position. It's about, are you in support of elites telling you what to do and how to live? Or do you think the people, we the people, should decide and form our own government?
We the people? What were you going to say, Jason?
I was going to piggyback. Ian, am I right? Are you an atheist or agnostic?
More agnostic than anything.
Okay. And so what I see from the left, honestly, is just they think that they're secular, so they think they're God. And I agree. It's just a power grab. Mm-hmm. And again, did you probably watch the or saw a little bit of like Game of Thrones? And Game of Thrones is just a story when it was good, the first four or five seasons, about what human beings will do for power and anything. They'll do anything for power. And that, and particularly if you don't have some kind of religious belief, some kind of faith in a higher power, and you think you're capable of being the ultimate decider, it puts you in a very bad, you'll do very bad things for power because you have so much belief in your ability to control things and do what's best for other people. And I just don't have that kind of arrogance because I believe I'm just a very tiny, insignificant part of this thing that God put together. And, you know, I don't want that kind of power. I literally want to stick to the principles taught in the Bible and, you know, hope for the best and hope that I'm right. And I just see the left is so secular and they see themselves as God. That's what scares me.
What makes me nervous about the church is I feel like the church has acted as now they are the mouthpiece of God. It's like another form of secularism almost. Like who cares about a building and a guy that tells you he's a priest? Like God's real. God's out there. God is an energy field flowing. Like it's there. It's always there. You don't need someone to you don't need to like be told. You don't need authority to tell you that.
What about your relationship with God?
I feel
the church out of it.
I feel it. I science has helped me see the cosmic microwave background radiation, for instance. It's this web of energy left over after the Big Bang. You see it arcing through star systems, and then you feel your heart beating. It's getting like the heat is coming from without. Like it's we're getting these electrical currents pumping through us. And after I started to see, I smoke a lot of weed. That helped a lot, actually. and to feel the heat. Yeah. And then you can feel your own heat. And I'm like, wow, did Jesus do Reiki? And then you see that Jesus like went off maybe to India for some period in his early life and studied like Hinduism and Reiki and came back as like a healer. So I started doing Reiki and that's real.
Let me throw in there. I think I actually enjoy when Ian and Seamus talk about religious stuff because Seamus comes from a more like, what's the right word? He's devout. You know, he goes to mass. Ian has a bunch of ideas about spirituality that I think need to be answered and it creates something interesting. I certainly think Ian sees or feels something that, you know, needs to be answered or defined, and maybe there's in the more rigid structures, people have thought about these things. I also want to add the suspense is killing me because I'm like, what's going on?
I know.
Yeah.
Someone's supposed to come to the door at any.
Yeah, it should be like, any second.
7:20.
Yeah. I know.
You know, I'll say briefly, you know, as a card-carrying atheist myself, a major problem is we have, you know, it's not religion per se that's the problem. I think it's like the dogma that tends to go hand in hand with it, and a lot of people on the left, a lot of these woke people, they've convinced themselves that they're not religious and that they also have no dogma, where that's the complete error. Like, they have their own dogma, but since they've convinced themselves they're non-religious, they think they're impervious to this. They don't see themselves as actually acting religious in many areas where they absolutely are.
We're good to go? All right, we're good to go, everybody. Okay. We're doing something weird.
All right. Here we go.
This is the first on TimCast IRL.
They're taking over.
They're taking Tim.
They're taking. Are we still on the air, or are they already taken
they're
over?
They're going to steal us in just all one right. second, Jason.
You heard it here, you guys.
Oh.
We're still on the air.
Oh, snap. Let me show you guys what's going on. I think we're off now. We've given them the stream.
Oh, yes, we have.
I gave them control.
Yes. Look at this. All right. The suspense was killing me because I'm like, I don't know when they're actually going to call me in. If you can hear me, I don't know what's going on. We're walking through the Daily Wire's headquarters. I got Joe Biden behind me, and we are making our way to the backstage live studio with Ben Shapiro, Michael Knowles, Andrew Klavan, Matt Walsh, and Jeremy Boring. And I wrote they're going to take over my show, but I'm going to take over theirs. So we're making our way through the studio right now. I think I can hear people. Let's see if we can pull this off effectively. I smell cigars. Coming around the corner, I'll be a little out of breath. Fun, huh? All right, here we go.
The thing is that you can... Uh-oh.
Hey, what is this?
Hey,
they just let anybody in here?
Oh, my God. What's security? I thought we had security in here.
Nope. I beat all of them.
You're going to hang out with us?
Absolutely, sir.
Hey, that's
fun. Wow, great.
And actually, you guys are taking over my show at the same time.
Are we live right now?
We're on Tim Pool's show.
You are all my guests on TimCast IRL right now.
Wow.
I couldn't fit all of your names in the title, so I just went with Ben Shapiro.
Wait a minute.
That's fair. That's the only one that's going to get you
in. Nice set, dude.
Oh, thank you.
This is way better.
We're in a trailer out in your alley.
Yeah. People don't realize that Tim has been broadcasting from our hill all week from a fifth wheel trailer that he converted into a mobile studio. And tonight he's going to learn how God feels about it, because we have thunderstorms coming through Nashville in 45 minutes, and he'll still be broadcasting from
Tim,
the most dangerous place in America to be in.
Welcome to my show, everybody.
Oh, it's good to be here.
Thanks for having me. Absolutely. This is the best lineup of guests I've ever had on Tim Kiss.
I really like being on your show from here, because when I go on your show from the hinterland, I got to drive an hour through the woods with serial killers.
It's like
killers.
Texas Chainsaw Man.
It is.
House, right?
It is. It's a cool house.
Your security guy almost gave me a heart attack as I was walking out. I walk out in the dark of night, and this guy goes, hi.
Well, it's funny when we've invited some left personalities who already have apprehension, and then they get really scared because, you know, it's Western Maryland, but it's the middle of nowhere. It's like the Blue Ridge Mountains.
Yep.
And you drive through pitch black, and then you have to drive up a long, it's about a, you know, what, like 1,500 feet driveway.
And there are security deer everywhere.
They're ready to pounce.
Well, you know, when you're driving up in the dead of night and your lights are on, all of a sudden you see glowing eyes everywhere. And then you're like, I think most people are fine with it. In the summer, it's fine. It's still day out when you arrive.
That's true.
Well, what were you guys talking about before I interrupted?
We were talking about 2024 and what we think is going to happen. And we're sort of positing the thesis that Democrats are so wildly out of tune with the American public right now that Republicans look pretty good, but they could make the mistake of taking their eye off the ball, which brought up the inevitable T word, right, of course, which is Trump and whether he runs.
Yeah. I think so, but isn't it starting to feel like DeSantis might be...
Your mouth's God's ears, my friend.
I will say that Trump saying, I think just this last week, that his health would be a factor in making the decision is the first time that he said anything that in any way left him an out not to run.
Yeah.
And in many ways, you know, he has a lot to lose.
I agree.
If he runs, there's always going to be an asterisk beside his 2020 loss. If he were to run and lose in 2024, you remove the asterisk. Hmm. And all the
prosecutions that they're threatening with is clearly political.
Now that makes me want him to run. Keep playing dirty.
No, I don't think so, because I think that he could actually be hurt financially by those if he runs. If he doesn't run, they won't. I have this sense, everybody keeps telling me I'm wrong. Everybody who knows Trump tells me I'm wrong. I have this sense he's not going to run, that he's staying relevant. He's raising money off his, you know, the hints that he's going to run. But I just don't think there's enough in it for him. Mm-hmm. And he's old.
Well, I always like to tell you you're wrong.
So. No.
Drew, that the prosecutions could hurt him, that this is the problem, that the powers that be are powerful.
Yes,
They can actually wield that power and really hurt you.
But why is DeSantis not in the same vein as Trump?
Well, he doesn't run if Trump runs, I think.
I'm beginning to doubt that's true.
Really?
I'm beginning to doubt that's true. And the reason I'm beginning to doubt that's true is because I think that what DeSantis, like most good politicians, understands is there is a time.
Yeah.
Right? This is something that Jeremy and I have discussed a bunch of times before, which is that there are certain politicians where it's like if they had grabbed the moment, it would have been their moment. And if they miss the moment, they're toast. And this happened with, for example, Elizabeth Warren in 2016. If she had jumped in 2016 and not let Hillary Clinton foreclose her, she would have been the Bernie figure in that race, and she would have stolen a lot of thunder from Hillary Clinton being the first presidential woman nominee.
Chris Christie in 2012.
Right, Chris Christie in 2012. Like, there are certain periods where if you go for the brass ring and you grab at it, it's your moment. And then if you miss it, it's just
gone. And also the other thing is, I think DeSantis understands that in the primary in 2016, Republicans running against Trump, they either just ignored him and didn't attack him at all, which was a mistake, or they attacked him basically from the left. And they said that, well, I don't like his attitude. It makes me uncomfortable. I think Trump is vulnerable. And what DeSantis probably understands, although I don't know him, is that if you can go at Trump from the right, and you can say, you can hit Trump on vaccines, you can hit him on Fauci, you can hit him on COVID. I actually think
the best path for DeSantis, as you said, we're still 2 years away from this. But if DeSantis were to choose to challenge Trump, I actually think his best path is not to hit Trump. I think his best path is essentially to say, Mr. President, I voted for you. There's no question in my mind that you are the man we needed in 2016. The question is, are you the man that we need in 2020?
Trump's not going to allow that.
Right.
That's what they tried in 2016, and then eventually Trump will turn around and go after
you.
And you're just sitting there. You're not prepared for it. So I think you have to be more proactive. It just, you don't have to be obsessive about it, but you but make your
argument I agree with you that
from the right.
I agree with you that a lot of Trump's appeal in 2016, because I felt this way when he was debating Jeb Bush, is that he just kept pummeling the guy who was more to the center. And Jeb Bush would be like, I'm really uncomfortable with how you talk about illegal immigration. And Trump would be right. Like, you're stupid. You're like, yeah! And there's a lot of that.
I feel like I have a different perspective from you guys because, for one, look how I'm dressed compared to you guys. I really do think, you know, in all honesty, though, I come from kind of a different world. I grew up in Chicago, and I didn't vote for Trump in 2016. I don't think everybody here did. Did you guys?
No, I didn't.
I did.
I did not vote for either.
In 2020, I've just been seeing over the past decade what I would describe as the left being so unreasonable and just out of their minds. I'm sitting with a group of prominent conservatives, and this is not how I grew up. Yep. I grew up in Chicago surrounded by Democrats. And now I'm looking at 2024 and I would vote for DeSantis. Hmm. I didn't like Trump in 2016. I voted for him because I know Biden, because I knew the Obama administration.
You voted for him in 2020.
2020, sorry.
Yeah, yeah.
In 2020, I voted for Trump. I liked that he didn't start new wars. I liked the Abraham Accords. I liked school choice. And I did not like wokeness because I think it's an affront to all of the civil rights battles that have been fought. Now we see DeSantis in Florida, and everything he's doing speaks to me. Not everything, but a lot of it. So I don't know if I would vote for Trump. I didn't necessarily want to vote for him in the first place.
No. Well, this is, I think, the biggest issue for Trump, and that is that my theory of elections is that elections are oppositional, and whoever the election is a referendum on loses. So in 2016, the great myth that the media tried to create is that it was a referendum on Trump. And it was not a referendum on Trump. It was on Hillary Clinton. Hmm. People looked at Hillary and they're like, I hate that lady. She's awful. She's garbage. And I don't know this Trump guy. He's real weird. Dumb stuff, but I'll take a shot at it.
That's right. This is how Trump can get fewer votes in Wisconsin than did Mitt Romney
4 years earlier. That's right.
And still win Wisconsin.
Correct.
Because the election was really about Hillary.
Right.
And Democrats were like, eh.
And then by 2020, Joe Biden ran what for him was, I think, the only campaign he could run, but it turned out to be kind of a brilliant campaign, which is he just lay in a basement for 6 months. And every so often they would creak open the crypt, he'd walk out and say, and then he'd go back downstairs and that would be the end of his campaign. And so the referendum was not on Biden, the referendum was on Trump. Well, you go to 2024, if Trump runs again, the question is, I'm not sure who that's a referendum on. Is it on Biden or is it on Trump? Right? That's a real question because they're now really, really prominent figures. If it's anybody but Trump, it's hard for it not to be a referendum on Biden. He's been president for the last 4 years and he's done, I'm honest to God, I'm amazed he's been able to set this many things on fire for a man who's not ambulatory.
You know, there's a tactic DeSantis is using, a rhetorical tactic that I think every Republican needs to adopt. The old Republican view of things when they were asked a question, what do you want for breakfast in the morning? Let's say, hey, Senator Rand Paul, what do you want for breakfast? He'd say, well, you know, some people want omelets and some people want pancakes. And the great thing about America is we can have whatever we want for breakfast. Right. And it's this very sort of ambiguous thing. And you ask DeSantis, what do you want for breakfast? He goes, look, we tried pancakes in Arkansas and we tried omelets and we're going to have scrambled eggs. Scrambled eggs work in Florida and they're going to work throughout America. Okay? And there's no question or ambiguity. It's very persuasive.
Well, let me ask you, is Joe Biden even going to run in 2024?
I mean, I think they have to. I think they have to strap him to a gurney. They have to turn him upright and they have to just wheel him around because they have to. What are they going to do? They're going to try out Kamala Harris, the worst candidate who's ever been created by God or man. It's unbelievable.
You will not be able to speak at all.
So it doesn't
matter. 82 years old.
What are you going to do? Kamala Harris is the best description I've heard is from the account JTLOL, which is that she is the human embodiment of a predictive text program. You start typing words into Google, and whatever is the next word is what she says. And so the importance of the passage of time is important with regard to the passage of time. And like, so she's terrible. And then they're like, oh, well, you know, we've got this other guy over here, and he's so great that he went on paternity leave for 2 months, and nobody even noticed. He couldn't fill a pothole in South Bend, Indiana, but on the other hand, he is gay. Yeah. And that's literally the pitch for Steve Buttigieg.
That's an impossible. First of all, I like that. Kamala Harris, to me, she's always like I was in high school when I have to give a book report, but I didn't read the book. Like, that's what she always sounds like. But you run into just a simple fact of age. So are you going to run a guy who will be, he'll be 82, right? And so by the end of his term, he's 86. That's just like an impossible.
Well, they don't have to get him to the end of his term. They just have to get him to.
Yeah, I don't
know. But for the purpose of running, they have to pretend that he's going to make it to the end of the term.
Yeah, I don't think.
No, he didn't pretend he was going to make it to the end of the term this time. Right? He basically was
the problem that they have, the reason I think they have to run him, I think that the base doesn't care if he's still cogent.
No, the base doesn't care.
They don't care.
Yeah.
The reason they have to run him is Kamala. They would like to sub him out with Buttigieg. they might even like to step him out if we are making moves towards Trump with Hillary Clinton, which would be their great revenge fantasy playing out. But the problem is that there is a sitting vice president. And how do you get her to just move aside and let you do that?
Well, but she'll, the only she'll way is lose if
they do have one Trump card, right? Which is they could theoretically call on Michelle, right? That is clearly their best move.
Because
it's a black woman VP. You just say, listen, there's this other black woman and she's more famous than you and she's more popular than you. And she's a best-selling author. And we have now softened her image to the point where she's not the radical who is writing Princeton theses about how America's racist.
Everybody wants to be president.
She might not be. She likes being Oprah. She likes being Oprah. Everybody very popular.
Oprah wants to be president.
Oprah would, that's a better.
Everyone wants to be president. Listen, Michelle Obama is the nuclear
option. No question.
Why wouldn't they use her?
I think they would love to use her. I think the only question is whether she and Barack want to have his, like, if she were to run and lose, whether this would tarnish the Obama magisterial image that he's created for himself. And that guy loves him. I mean, Obama loves him some Obama. I mean, when he came to the White House, that was...
It's one of the sorriest displays I've ever seen.
It really was. It was the first time...
Sorry.
It actually did. I can't believe I'm going to say this. It made me feel bad for Biden.
Oh,
it
yeah.
did. Oh, I mean, he walks up on stage and he makes a joke about how he's Barack Obama's vice president. And then Barack Obama gets up and is like, well, yeah, over there's my vice president. It's like, you don't get to make that joke. That makes you a dick. I mean,
the two things that were most on display in that entire episode were, one, what a sorry bastard Barack Obama is. And if you read Maureen Dowd during his administration, she hated him for his treatment of Joe Biden as his vice president. Biden was this completely loyal, subservient even vice president. And Obama treated him like absolute dirt the entire time. So you just see how his view of himself and his view of people around him. And then the other sorry thing is you saw the media's view of him. You know, that horrible clip where Biden realizes that the president of the United, no one wants to talk to the president of the United States.
Multiple.
Because they're all talking to Barack Obama.
He's got his hand on Obama's shoulder and Obama's shaking him off to shake hands over here.
You just realize... The media
to guide him to the bathroom.
That's right.
That's all he wanted.
The media genuinely believes that Barack Obama is a deity, and Barack Obama agrees with them. That's what was on display to me.
Did Joe Rogan say something to that effect about Michelle Obama? And I don't want to put words in Joe's mouth, but he mentioned something about Barack Obama being a great president or something to that effect, and Michelle Obama being a potentially great option. I think. Mm-hmm. You know, he's relevant for one having the biggest podcast in the world, but I think he speaks to a lot of people who are in the middle and confused or don't necessarily know how they're going to vote come 2022 and 2024. But I think if these people, the moderates, independents, former left people see Michelle Obama, I think a lot of them will be convinced to vote Democrat again. I'm not entirely convinced. For me, my brain exploded after 2020 with just, yeah, I'm done with this. You know, I'm, yeah. Or 2018 even, when I think it was 31 seats that did districts that voted for Trump, vote Democrat. And all of these moderate Democrats said, we're going to bring you kitchen table issues. We're not going to focus on culture war issues. And the first thing they do is they move to impeach Trump. And it felt like I was just spit on. I was like, you know, I had faith that if I just, you know, push back, I donated to some of these Democrats thinking that they'll actually reconfigure things and fix this. And they only made it worse.
The only thing I think that they could really harm Michelle Obama if she were to run is I think that she really has ideologically, she always has been very radical. And I think that she will re-embrace wokeness because she too is in that bubble. Yep. I think the most, ironically, the thing that we complain the most about is probably the thing that may save the Republic, and that is the media bias. The media bias is so strong that Democrats do not understand that there's an entire world outside of the Beltway that just thinks they're crazy. And so the reason that you see the White House saying things like, well, you know, it's very important that we use the DOJ to crack down on people stopping little girls from being turned into little boys. The reason they say that is because the New York Times agrees with them and the Washington Post agrees with them and everybody they know agrees with them.
The other thing about Michelle Obama is that she's attractive to people, I guess, not to me, but to people as like an idea. But if she's running for office, then she's actually going to have to be out there talking. And when you listen to her talk, kind of to your point about how radical she is, but also she's just really a kind of a vile human being. I'll never forget this story she told on a podcast somewhere about when she experienced racism. Like she was still harboring this resentment because she went to get ice cream and a white woman didn't notice her and cut in front of her. And she told this whole story about how she was a victim of racism as the first lady of the United States. because a white woman was getting ice cream before her.
Well, so there's that story that she told about how she went to the grocery store and she was tall, so somebody asked her to take something down from the top shelf.
Exactly. That
she said that was racism. It's like, no, you're just tall. I mean, like, I'd ask Matt to get something from the top shelf for me. I mean,
but who are the voters who fall for that stuff?
Yeah, I agree with you, Tim. I think that Michelle Obama, I don't think she would run, but I think that she is a good candidate if she runs. But you know, the voters are not as enamored of identity politics as the Democrats are. In no way are they.
Well, right. the poll about the parental rights and education bill in Florida has overwhelming support from Democrat voters,
right,
who were polled at the very least. Yet they double down on this stuff. It's like you were saying, the media bias is palpable. I don't know if you guys saw CNN Plus only has 10,000 daily active users. Wow.
Hold on just a second.
Yeah. Just
but I think I'll enjoy Chris Wallace's new show, What Have I Done? I think.
By the way, who was the business genius at Warner who was like, okay, so we have CNN and no one watches. What if we take the same hosts and we put them behind a paywall, doing more boring things? I mean, how does this go wrong here, guys? Well, this seems like a genius business plan to me.
Well, they're people giving you money every time you don't watch CNN. You know, make money. I like it.
You know, I will tell you guys something interesting, though, because Matt and I were talking about this the other day when I asked you, why is it the Daily Wire is 600,000 plus subscribers? CNN can't even get 10,000 daily users. You mentioned mission, I think is what you said, right? Mm-hmm. When I worked
Well, I said me. I said the reason is me. And then
the number two reason.
He did say that. He said he was better than everybody. You know, when I was working for these big corporate media outlets, I was at a company called Fusion, which is ABC News and Univision. They said mission-driven storytelling. That was their line as to what their goals were. It's almost like they were either predicting or wanting politics to be the main driver of what was going to bring people to different media outlets. The only issue is I felt like their narratives were built on lies and manipulation. We have to withhold information from people, trick them, feed them only the information mm-hmm. we want. Whereas I feel like with what you guys do, with what we do, it's here's everything. Let's argue about it.
Yep. Well, that's what I love about this show that we get to do once a month is that we quite often disagree. And those disagreements, I think, are central to what makes the Daily Wire work. I think at the core of the Daily Wire success is our fundamental religious difference. That we talked about it today, in fact, that our fundamental religious disagreement means that central to our friendship is the idea that there's not ubiquity unanimity in our thought. And it's not that we don't have a strong perspective as a company. It's not that we don't have a strong, that we don't have a side in the fight, but it's that we are actually engaged in the exchange of ideas and trying to always learn more and know more and be better. Tim, thank you for coming on uninvited. Please feel free to invite yourself on the show again in the future. Thank you to all of our DailyWire.com members for making this possible. We're going to wrap up because there's a thunderstorm rolling in. This guy's got to get back to his tornado bait trailer, and Ben Shapiro has to get on an airplane and get out of here. Head over to DailyWire.com/subscribe. Use promo code BuildTheFuture. You still have 23 hours left to become a member at 45% off. We'd really appreciate you being a member. We appreciate our members making it possible for us to do the work that we're doing, including fighting woke Disney. So thanks again. We'll see you next week. We'll give you a fake clap. I don't know, one of these days.
Should I just run out the door now?
Yeah, you should leave.
Thanks, guys. It was a blessing.
Good to see
Thanks.
You.
Thanks. Yeah. Thanks for having me.
There in the earlier part of the show, they were talking about Trump, DeSantis, and who was going to run. And then they kind of parlayed the conversation into the Democrats and who they thought was going to run for the Democrats. I thought that Ben Shapiro made a very interesting point about populism when he mentioned Michelle Obama and running a populist candidate. I'm interested to see what you guys think about that.
The Michelle Obama question, that part of the discussion is what fascinated me because I do think she would probably be the best candidate for the Democrats. I do think, again, corporate media is obsessed with, oh, so-and-so's making history because they're the first black woman this, just like we just saw with Ketanji Brown Jackson. And so they're fascinated by participating or witnessing history. Mm-hmm. And it's like when Barack Obama first ran in 2008, I think a lot of people voted because this is a history-making deal and I want to be on the record that I voted for Barack Obama and it's proof that I'm not racist.
It's got the history building, and they've spent a lot of years curating Michelle Obama's image, and having the last name Obama is just going to be huge in the realm of politics. So yeah, she is the nuclear option for sure.
We had parlayed what you guys were talking about with populism. And I liked how Ben brought up Michelle Obama. I think we may have had an audio technical glitch in the first part, and then it seemed to smooth out.
It worked.
Yeah, you guys got it the first time, you know, and it's all about it. When you have a new piece of technology, a new cool idea, you try it. And if it fails, you try it again, and you do it, and then you get it right. Mm-hmm. And that's what we're
that
doing
was fun.
Here.
Yeah.
That looked great.
I run through the rain.
Yeah,
and,
you're
kind of
damp now.
And hang out with those guys. Cigar smoke everywhere.
Oh gosh.
What were you guys talking about? So let's get back into it. And thanks for sitting around while I was doing that thing. I appreciate
enjoyed watching.
I enjoyed watching. Yeah. That was fascinating. Yeah. That was not the conversation I was expecting, but I was fascinated.
You know, shout out to Ron DeSantis. Thanks for bringing him up. And we were just basically carrying the conversation forward from where you guys were talking about, you know, who do you think the Democrats are going to run? Because I cannot imagine it would be Joe Biden at this point.
I will say with, I'm sitting there and I know I'm in for the last few minutes of the Daily Wire's show, but I don't want to just keep talking over everybody. But I also kind of felt like, well, I should talk because I'm only here for a few minutes.
Yeah.
But I know Ben was saying he thinks they have to have Joe Biden run. They're going to strap him to a gurney and wheel him out. I think he's right. But I don't think even strapping him to a gurney would make it possible for him to run. The dude couldn't run in the first place. He was calling a lid and just sleeping the whole time.
Yeah.
And Ben mentioned it was a referendum on Trump. I don't even think we're going to have a referendum on Biden. I think we're having a referendum on Democrats. So this midterm election is going to be big. And I think there's a lot of variables between now and 2022, this is November, the midterm elections, and 2024. But I don't, it's tough to say because I feel like reading the news every day, watching what's going on, seeing the impacts, that certainly regular people must be feeling some of this, but maybe that's just wrong. Maybe even though we might see the problem and have some solutions to offer, regular people don't know what the problem is. So they're being approached by two different groups, Democrats and Republicans, who are saying, trust me, I'll do right by you. I'm sitting here saying I've watched the news relentlessly. I've been reading about this. I've seen the policies. I don't think anybody's perfect. I think everybody gets a little bit of the blame. But obviously Donald Trump was better. And they say, oh, but you're biased. I can't trust you. And it's like, they call you right wing if you're telling the truth at this point. If you say something like Joe Biden flew his son on Air Force 2 to China for a private equity deal, that's a conflict of interest. They say that's a right wing talking point. No, it's a fact. And I'm not going to vote for a guy who did that. Donald Trump also has, stupid BS for sure. They were advertising Trump golf resorts or whatever on some State Department website. I'm not a fan of that. But if I have to choose between the two, Trump is objectively better. Hmm. Well, we got a tornado for
us. Yeah, it's super loud. I think this is going to be an election where there's a lot of people, and I put myself in that camp, sort of those disaffected left of center people who are still consider themselves liberals in many sense. During the last election, I couldn't bring myself to vote for either of the parties. I didn't like Trump. I couldn't bring myself to vote for him. I couldn't vote for Biden either. But if this next election doesn't have Trump in it, I mean, it's just, there's so many people I think that are in my boat who there's no reason not to vote for a Republican anymore. DeSantis has all the best parts of Trump where he's, he's bold, he's anti-woke, he's going to go after people, he's not going to take crap from anybody. But he doesn't have that narcissistic insanity. What's he going to do next? Is he just going to start pushing the nuke button or something? And I think that's actually a powerful thing. I think this is the first election in a while where those disaffected liberals are actually free to vote their mind in a way they hadn't been previously.
Well, let's talk about these stories that we pulled up. We got one from the New York Post. Mind the tornado above us, Brent.
Yeah.
I apologize.
Pay no attention.
This is from the New York Post. ESPN star Jason Whitlock blasts Disney for feminizing sports. And I think this will play a role in the upcoming elections in that you've got what's happening with the NCAA swimming with Leah Thomas. And I know I've been critical of people who refuse to speak up, saying, if you're not speaking up publicly, how can I defend you? Because people will just say, nobody's mad about this. What are you complaining about if you can't stand up for yourself? But I will say, at the very least, these people will be secret Trump voters. Like we saw in 2016 and 2020, a large percentage of people who would not admit it, but once they get into the polling booth, they look around, look over their shoulders, and then hit Trump a million times.
The history
because of things like this.
Voting, it's secret for a reason, because that's a natural part of people's minds. When they see crap out there, they don't want to have to stand up and say it, but they're going to vote the way they feel. See the lights flicker there?
Ooh.
We in the rain now.
Wait, how did the lights flicker? We're on independent electricity.
Wow. Magnetic fields.
Well, so Jason, let's talk about this, your take on the feminization of sports.
Well, I think a lot of people, it kind of went over their heads in 1996 when Disney acquired ABC and ESPN. And that once you start, once you're taken over by Disney, you now, Disney's going to promote its values. There's no greater cultural force than perhaps Disney across the entire globe. And so I think Disney came in with an agenda. I think in 1994, Disney tried to acquire NBC, couldn't. NBC at that time had the NBA broadcast. Disney has wanted to get in the sports lane. They got into the sports lane with ESPN because they understand, anybody in the entertainment field, entertainment industry understands that live sports is the most valuable asset for attracting a massive audience and being able to preach your values to a massive audience. Particularly in this now DVR, watch stuff when you want to era that we're in, live sports is the only thing where people sit down and watch it as it happens live. And so they wanted ESPN, they wanted it in the sports world, and they wanted to apply their values, their culture to the sports world, and that's what has happened. And I think Disney, based on their attack on young kids and the sexuality and the gender thing, Disney believes in the matriarchy. Disney believes in the uprooting of the patriarchy. Disney is very feminist, and they've applied all those values to ESPN, which is the worldwide leader in sports. And that's why if you just look at sports over the last 25, 30 years since Disney has owned ESPN, sports have just become softer and more feminized.
I spoke about this in 2018 when we were seeing culture, you know, video games, movies, seeing all the woke influx. I said it's going to be real crazy when the NFL, the NBA, and Major League Sports start being forced to adopt these things. And we're starting to see it. You know, we spoke with Jonathan Isaac. That dude's awesome.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And he was talking about how he didn't want to kneel for Black Lives Matter. People got mad at him about it. He said, we had a meeting. We said, we're going to do this. And he was like, I don't believe in it, though. The crazy thing is, here's a guy. You got Colin Kaepernick who kneels. He gets ragged on for it. Well, he brought politics into the game. I understand why people might be mad about that. Well, the politics there starts spreading to everyone kneeling. And now you got a guy, Jonathan Isaac, being like, I just don't want to kneel. I don't mind if you do. And they're mad at him because he won't bend the knee. You see, I think.
And just keep in mind, everybody on ESPN, the worldwide leader in sports, is criticizing Jonathan Isaac. And Lord behold, take Drew Brees, the quarterback for the Saints, makes a comment basically defending the national anthem. And he gets assassinated, his character does, by everybody on ESPN like he's some racist pig because the national anthem means something to him, means something to people in his family that were in the service. And so that's, again, these athletes are being bullied into kneeling and adopting these values.
We're actually, this Sunday, we got a special episode. We did a podcast with Ben and Ben Shapiro and Jonathan Isaac separately. But you know, he was saying that he doesn't think these people believe in the message, that the players are just kind of, you know, they're told they have to do it, and they're like, okay, whatever, I guess. And, you know, many of them probably outright just don't like these values. I think the reality is a lot of people are Christians. I think a lot of people like families. What worries me is, why aren't there more people like, you know, Isaac, who are going to just very calmly and passionately say, look, I believe in my country. No disrespect to those who protest. I'm going to do my thing. Why can't we at least have more players like that?
I imagine it's because the paychecks are so big. Mm-hmm. Those guys, they make so much money. That, I mean, how can you turn away from a $90 million contract, $10 million contract over 3 years or 4 years or whatever they make? What's an average contract in the NBA right now?
Probably $5 to $8 million. But
wait, for like your average player?
For how many years?
What about your
3 to 5 years?
What about your lowest tier player? Like the
lowest tier player is probably making $800,000-$900,000.
Wow. That may,
but let's take the big money people out of it. Just talking to Colin before the show, working in academia, and I talked about this today about just corporate America in general. If you want to move up in leadership at any major corporation, if you don't adopt the values of diversity, inclusion, and equity, if you don't hop on board with all the LGBT stuff, if you don't swallow it, you can't move up, or you get run out of academia.
Yeah.
It's the same principles are applied that you see. The pressure in the sports world is even more intense. These guys have guaranteed contracts and have made generational wealth. What if you're just a guy that works at name the company or yeah. Disney or anywhere that doesn't want to hop on board with these values? You get run out. You can't move up.
Yeah, it's the same dynamic that's taking place, you know, in sports, in academia. I mean, it's like this spiral of silence they go into where everyone else is doing this one signal. And if you have areas that tend to be, you know, politically skewed in a certain direction, like academia, a signal that might have started out with like, you know, oh, I'm just putting my pronoun in my email signature or in my social media bio. These soon, rather than just being a signal of like, oh, I'm just inclusive, it then becomes the people who don't have these little things in their bios and their email signatures. That becomes a tell, because once it gets so popular, then the person who doesn't do it is the one that stands out, and now all of a sudden people can question them and, you know, what are you doing?
I'm interested in your experience. You're an evolutionary biologist. Like, with the I guess you would call it the emergence or the mainstreamism of the transgender movement, or I don't even know if you call it a movement, but just this whole, like, what's it like in the science community when you're discussing biology? And if you've got a story, or what were you going to say?
Well, no, I just want to kind of pull back a little bit what you were saying and merge these conversations. You know, we're talking about the feminization of sports. We've got someone, you're a biologist.
Yeah.
Well, so let's talk about what's happening with, you know,
the
economist.
You can define a woman. He's a bio.
Well, exactly. Yeah, yeah. So, you know, I think we'll get to that in a second, but let's kind of merge that. As a biologist witnessing what's happening in sports with the NCAA and all that stuff, what's your take, and what do you have to say for, you know, what's happening? Like, what's your view on it?
Yeah, I mean, it's the same dynamic, and it just requires people to feel like they're comfortable enough by seeing other people who are speaking up and not getting canceled to have them speak up. I mean, when I was in academia, there was no one talking about the stuff I was talking about. I was one of the first people to be like, actually, there are only two sexes. It's not a spectrum. It's not a social construct. And, I mean, that was all the arrows hit me at once, and that's a signal to everyone to, you know, who thinks the same way I do, that they're not going to say anything, because they see this is how it happens when the one vocal person comes up. And so it's that chilling effect, and I think that's playing out in sports, is that chilling effect when someone gets hammered in the media for their reasonable opinion. That just sends a signal to everyone else, like, oh, this is a third rail. I'm not even going to go there.
What is this, right? We all of a sudden, we have academia terrified. We have one of the most lucrative and high-paying industries, major sports, and they are terrified of this ideology.
Well, because they know they can get canceled. They know
that
they can get run out of their jobs and have to go independent the way that Colin has. I do want to, and I don't want to speak for Tim, but I do think what Tim was asking you, quite honestly, was like, we had a man, William Thomas, swimming against women.
I was there.
In the Ivy. Oh, you were. And yeah, that's what he's like. As a biologist, what is your take? This is crazy to us.
Well, it's completely insane. I mean, so the thing that's underpinning all of it is this, like, this gender ideology that is saying that what a man or a woman or a boy and a girl is has nothing to do with your biology, your reproductive organs or anything. It has everything to do with just your internal sense of who you are, or your identification with social roles and stereotypes of, like, masculinity or femininity. That's literally what they think is a man or a woman, which really goes against what we've been hearing feminists say for so long, that, you know, a woman can behave any way they want to and still be a woman. You can be a masculine woman, you can be a feminine woman, you can be a feminine man, you can be a masculine man, but you're fundamentally defined as a man or woman by your reproductive anatomy. Somehow this ideology is just taken root. I think a lot of it's because you see these big organizations like the ACLU, like the Human Rights Campaign. They had all this funding, billions of dollars going into something like getting gay marriage passed, which I personally think was a good thing to get passed. But once they get that big victory, what do they do next? They're set up in a situation where they need to find something else to put all this money into. They have all these donors. They're not just going to turn their lights off, shutter the windows, and say, like, well, we won, time to go home. There's no more big dragons to slay. And if you look at where the funding went in these organizations, it used to be all going into gay marriage. And then, what was it, 2014 or 15, when it became federally legal.
14, I think.
Yeah. Then you see the narrative switch to trans everything, and it's this gender ideology, and it's this built-in apparatus with billions of dollars behind it that is just shunting this money into 0.5% of the population. And we have no response to it. We haven't built up the organizations to respond to this thing now that isn't the next.
I used to work in nonprofits. I did fundraising. And this was one of the things I witnessed. A good nonprofit should put itself out of business.
Yeah.
If you say, hey, we got an issue with there's not enough panda bears. Mm. Well, you know, maybe in 20, 30 years, all of a sudden panda bears are no longer endangered anymore. What does the nonprofit do? Waves goodbye to everybody and says, mission accomplished. This was the goal. We saved the panda bear. What these organizations will do is they'll say, well, it was never about the pandas. What about the kangaroo? What about this new songbird? They don't want to cease to exist. They like the power they've accrued.
They transition.
Well, and they have people on their, they're paying people. They have paychecks. They have a, you know, they have
Lydia
a,
got my
they
job.
Have
they have employees. Exactly. I think Greenpeace is a good example of this. I briefly worked for Greenpeace. And the one thing I didn't understand, and I started looking at, I think, what's the, Lydia, do you know the guy, the Greenpeace guy's name? Doctor, is it, it's not, I think it's Patrick Moore, right?
Yeah. Is we're going to have him, I think, yeah.
Maybe.
Yeah.
I know there's also a Paul Watson who left, and he's the Sea Shepherds guy. But I believe Patrick Moore's name. Can you guys check?
Yeah, I'm looking it up.
Because
now.
He's pro-nuclear power.
Oh, yeah.
And so he's been very vocal on similar issues as us.
Yeah, Patrick Moore.
Patrick Moore. So Greenpeace, it starts because they're opposing nuclear testing. I respect that. I don't like the nuclear bombs being tested and the devastating effects. It blanketed this planet with radioactive particles that interferes with scientific instruments. So there's, yeah, it's not good that everybody on the planet was blowing things up to test things. And so they oppose it. And they would do things like send out boats into the area so they couldn't conduct tests. And I'm like, I dig it. Now they're saying nuclear energy is bad. Why? In my personal opinion, because nuclear is a scary word. It allows them to keep the company going and make money. And there's reasons why people like Patrick Moore leave, because they're like, you're off mission. This is not what we're supposed to be doing. These nonprofits, I agree. I think it's a really important point that often doesn't get brought up. I remember I was working for a nonprofit that did fundraising, and one of the organizations they were fundraising on behalf of was the Human Rights Campaign, the HRC. Apparently, and I could be getting this wrong, I was not high up or anything, but there was a conversation where there are a few organizations that were rejecting some bill because it granted certain rights to LGB people, but not T people. And so the Human Rights Campaign was like, we're going to go for this because it's a win. These other organizations were like, no, you know, you shouldn't. So there was a point where they were willing to outright be like, we will advocate for laws that do not protect this group of people. I wonder now if it's just part of the process that once you get certain laws passed, now you can move on to your next mission and make sure the money keeps flowing. You need more scare tactics. I think you hit the nail on the head with a large portion of what we're seeing. Activism can't stop. There's money to be made.
This is why we're focusing on microaggressions now. We've ran out of macro ones.
Yep.
We skipped the desi aggressions, and we're going to be moving on to pico aggressions next, I think.
We've run out of... We have a very short supply of racism, and so now racism is, oh, you didn't call me by my proper name. I think we just had a baseball player, a baseball first base coach, I think, just yesterday for the San Francisco Giants. He got called an MF. I can say motherfucker probably on this show.
Sure, why not?
He got called a...
We do try to be family friendly, but we're not going to cry about swear words.
He got called an MF, and he said that when the guy said it, it reeked of racism.
What?
I didn't know. Literally.
What?
And so, because there's such a short supply of racism, we've had to expand what is racism. And so now, if in the heat of a sports battle, if you call someone an MF, and they happen to be black and you happen to be white, that reeks of racism. I want to, if I can, and I think I can do this on this show, not because I think you guys are going to agree with me, but I just want to say it because Colin said something interesting, and Tim, you push me back in line if I'm taking the conversation somewhere you don't want it to go. But Tim said, or Colin said that you agreed with same-sex marriage and thought it was a good thing. I have to sit here and say, I disagree with that, and not because I have a problem with the LGBT crowd, the gay crowd, or whatever. I think we've moved in the society where we think everything is for everybody. And I don't think everything is for everybody. Tim's jeans, they're not for me. So I should not try to squeeze into them. And I don't think there was a long period in my life where I was very irresponsible in my dating and sexual life. And I was never in the right mindset to be married. Marriage wasn't for me. I had no control over. And so I think we've moved to where we want to make everything for everybody. And so I think my sexual promiscuity, no different than same-sex attraction, it makes me not an ideal candidate for marriage.
I agree with the majority of the sentiment that not everything is for everybody. And absolutely, it seems like, you know, it's like the sarcasta ball in South Park where they make all the kids wear the goofy things and the football becomes a balloon. When you try to make everything equal, then, you know, what do? You got to cut off the tall grass. However, when I look at the issue of gay marriage, I agree with Colin. I think this is an interesting conversation. I think it's good. I think it's good in the sense that LGBTQIA plus people should not be discriminated against based on those characteristics. There's questions in what that means when it manifests, like who gets access to specific spaces, like women's only spaces. Does it mean female or otherwise? I think that's part of the conversation we have. But I mean, like, you can't throw someone out of your business for specific reasons. You know, like we want to be public accommodations should be equal to all. And we should have, this is my view. It's the more liberal view, I suppose. But I think that if you're part of society, you're paying taxes and we're all funding this machine, then you should be able to accommodate someone and not arbitrarily just be like, I don't like the way you look, so get out. But within certain within reason, you can still do that anyway. You can give someone no reason and say, oh, you said a naughty word, and so I have the right to refuse service to anybody. It becomes increasingly impossible to actually maintain control of people's views and opinions. Yeah. But anyway, just to the point of gay marriage, the question I had when Prop 8 was happening, I think this was in California, yeah, was, isn't marriage specifically an Abrahamic institution, which is rooted in going to the church and saying vows before God? If that's the case, then I don't believe it is appropriate for the state to mandate what the church does. However, if the state recognizes marriage as some legal contract with legal ramifications, those must be granted to anybody. Now, there are certainly questions about, you know, what the writers brought up, polygamy and things like that. And I'm like, well, there was polygamy a long time ago. It's not here now. We're just talking about cultural shifts and cultural changes. But if there are two people who love each other, and this is the current standard we're in, I think, you know, LGBTQIA+, they should be able to get married and live together, and they should have all of the tax rights and legal rights. I don't want to hear another story about, you know, two men who love each other, and one guy gets sick, and his husband isn't allowed to go in and see him as he's dying. That's a horrifying story. Because it's a man and his brother, you know, his brother gets cancer. He can go in and see him. These two guys spend their whole lives together. They love each other. Look, I don't think that's any of my business. One of the things that arises that's changing everything is going after kids, right? I'm not saying, you know, I think if there's a teacher in a school who's gay and a kid walks up and sees a picture and says, who's that? The teacher can say, that's my husband. And the kid can say, but you're a boy. How do you have a husband? The teacher should then say, well, maybe you'll learn more about this when you're older. Ask your parents. It's really that simple. When they start saying they want mandatory education on very specific things, where some of these books have been particularly graphic, that's when I'm like, yo, we are not talking about civil rights for an individual. We are not talking about me saying I want to make sure that the people I know and care about are able to be there for their loved ones. We're talking about going to kids and explaining in detail, 5 to 9-year-olds, serious adult things that it should not be up to them. It should be up to the parents. And sometimes there might be parents who are like, my 6-year-old is ready. Okay, well, I personally disagree. I think 6 is a bit too young. You should maybe wait till they're getting closer to puberty, but I'm not the parent. So there are still limitations to where we as a society have to decide what is abuse and what isn't.
Talking about marriage a little bit, I think you make a really good point. You got to define what it is and what it means. I think that in the church, it's a union of under God, essentially. And I'm not 100% familiar, but it's really about almost like a magical union with your soul. But then when you talk about marriage in the state, it's just a business contract. And the way I look at it at this current state is I'm treating it like a business contract. I want to give my wife money, my girlfriend, and I don't want to get taxed on it. So I'm going to marry her so I can give her a bunch of money. and stop. My love for her is irrelevant. It's just a business deal. But I'm interested how you guys, and I hope that, I think that that's maybe the conversation people in society should have when discussing who should be able to do what when it pertains to marriage and what it actually means. And then, and people sometimes you'll say like, well, civil union, then you get all the digital rights without calling it marriage. But then they're like, no, I want to label it the same. I want to be treated the same. Then you start getting into identity politics.
Yeah. Well, I think what Jason was saying earlier and what you were getting at was the sort of slippery slope you get into where, like, you have a movement like the LGBTQ plus IA to whatever. And the reason that number, that those letters keep expanding is because they've defined themselves by, we're the most inclusive group ever. We're going to just accept anyone who's atypical, any axis you can imagine. And that leads to them not being able to just really push out the fringes of the people that really shouldn't be part of their groups. You know, like, there are some organizations that will want to add the P, which is the pedophile, to, like,
boom,
these types of groups.
The P is silent.
And they can't police their borders because they've just, we're so inclusive. It's an orientation. And by that, like, they need to be able to police their borders to some degree because some people are just bad people. Some people, in certain ideologies as well.
Maybe you guys, P could mean police.
Have you guys, police, for sure. Have you guys talked about the jeweler with the anti-woke ad? I don't know, because I wasn't here for a little bit.
No, we didn't talk about that.
Let's pull the story. We got the story from TimCast.com. Jeweler launches anti-woke ad asking, what is a woman? What is a woman? What's fascinating, I don't think this story is inherently newsworthy, but it is interesting that people are starting to push back and just begin to assert that women exist, or that women are adult human females. The reason I find this story interesting enough to elaborate on is that it's a jeweler doing it. And why is a jeweler making an anti-woke ad? Well, jewelry, there's a very traditional gender norm in the purchase and delivery, gifting of jewelry. It is very often, typically, a male will buy shiny rocks to present to a female as a sign of, in effort to woo said female.
And then he's like, hold this for me because I don't want to carry it around.
Mm. Well, I do think it's fascinating when you break it down to its root. It's like, I'm going to reference Chicken City. When you watch the rooster do the dance around the hens, he like pulls out one wing and then shuffles around him. Yeah, he's trying to tell the girl, like, look at me, I'm hot stuff. Males in our society buy shiny rocks and present those shiny rocks to women like, look at me, look what I got, I can afford this for you. And it's courtship. If you get rid of gender roles, you're going to eliminate, to a great degree, jewelry. People are doing tattoo rings instead. They're moving away from this. So I guess to break it down, what we're going to see is industry dependent upon gender roles are going to start becoming resistant and pushing back because they want to exist. Much like you mentioned in a previous segment, nonprofits have to keep moving forward with new groups to fight for. Industries that rely, like, let's talk about, honeymoon escapes, where they have rooms designed for a male and a female specifically. I mean, they're going to be like, what do we do in this new environment? Well, I think eventually you're going to see companies just come out and be like, no, we oppose this. Because they don't want to cease to function.
I will admit, I think everyone loves gems. I don't know. No, maybe it's just me. But I think maybe it comes from that men hunted, and if they had a ring on their finger and they got it caught on a branch, it would rip their finger off. So they wanted as little encumbrance as possible. So they would store the gems with the wife. I don't know if that's really the history of why the woman had them and the man didn't. But then you look at like ancient kings and pharaohs, and they were all adorned with gems and jewels and things like that. So they may have a market with both. I mean, the age of hunting is essentially... hunting for necessity has dipped. Not that it's over, but we seem to be in a lull.
They're going anti-woke. That's that one particular jeweler. I tend to agree with Ian, because what's going to happen, these businesses are going to adjust to the new normal. And so, like, this is particularly acute in the black community. Our culture is so matriarchal. Women are at the head of the black community. I somewhat reluctantly have to admit that. And so what jewelers are going to start doing is they're going to create the custom of women buying gold chains for their men. They're just going to adjust their business model. Again, it's no different for me. I'm 54. I'm old. My dad always drove a Cadillac. I now watch sports events, and the Cadillac commercials now all feature black women mostly. They used to market it to black men. That was Cadillac. That was the joke. That was the stereotype. Black men drove Cadillacs. Cadillac has adjusted. Black women now drive Cadillacs.
Is it working? Is the marketing working?
I don't know. I just know what I see. And when you watch car commercials and there are black people in it, they're catering towards the black woman primarily.
One thing a lot of people notice is that commercials will have mixed race families very often. Have you noticed this?
Oh, yeah.
Well, of course, there are, more, what's the right word?
Same race marriages or.
Well, no. I mean, yes, but I mean, the people who complain about it tend to be more identitarian. So they're like, why are so many commercials now pushing this? And I'm like, whoa, slow down there, buddy. They're not pushing it. They're trying to make money off everybody. And my opinion is that they'll end up making money off nobody. Right. So the point of the commercial is you mentioned black women with Cadillacs. I think it's fine if you want to market to whoever you want to market to. Right. I was watching TV and a dating app commercial came on featuring interracial gay couples. And I said, look, I have no issue with interracial gay couples. Like, by all means, have your life, live your life. I'm just curious as to how much money they spent and how much money they think they'll make off of a market that is probably small. I'm not saying they shouldn't do it. They can do what they want. But it's interesting that the left position would be like, it's good they're doing this ad because of diversity. But are they advertising to a group of people that don't actually want their product, or there just aren't that many? There's not that many people to buy the product when you're trying to relate to them. So in the instance of marketing Cadillacs to black women, I'm wondering if a culture exists that has black women saying they want this vehicle. So when they see a commercial, they feel represented by it, or would they just be like, I don't want that car?
Well, I wonder if they're seeing their representation as, an interracial gay couple. That might not be who they're actually targeting. That might be who they're portraying in the commercial, but they might just be targeting the people who would just care about that sort of identitarian thing generally.
I understand. However, and maybe it's just my assumption, I would imagine that, a young white woman might be like, oh, that's so nice. I'm going to use Bumble because, look, you're saying here's a product for you. And the you is someone that is not part of that demographic. So if the commercial said, our app is for everyone, male, female, LGBTQ, it didn't say that. It just said find love and it showed, an interracial gay couple. And so I wonder if these companies will wokeify their marketing to the point where regular people will not feel represented by it. So in the point of the interracial couples in commercials, me personally, well, I don't care because I come from a family like that. So I'm kind of like, yeah, whatever. But if you're selling Kellogg's, they used to have commercials where it'd be a black family and they're giving the cereal to their children, or it'd be a white family. Now it's mixed. And I wonder if white families or black families see themselves in those families or just feel like that's not me.
I would think psychologically, if you have a successful solvent company in your marketing, you would allocate 10% of your marketing funds to off-market people that aren't part of your demographic. You'd probably do experimental campaigns here and there, but only if you're already successful. I can't imagine a company that is just starting up would try to market to people that they didn't think they were going to try and sell to. I had a question with you about gems really quick, Colin. Biologically, is there any evidence that men or women are more drawn to shiny objects?
I don't know specifically in humans, but there are a lot of species, a lot of, insects as well that do these, gift giving. They call them nuptial gifts. And it's kind of funny because sometimes they're shiny. Sometimes there's a built-in bit of nutrition to it. But you also see this cheating behavior where some male fly will try to give this gift that looks like it's containing all this nutrition, but it's actually hollow. It's sort of like the cubic zirconia version of an animal trying to give, to dupe this female into mating with them by giving them a hollow gift.
It's usually men giving the gift to the woman.
It's almost exclusively the males.
And it's usually because they're seeking a mate to have a child with.
Yeah, okay. they woo them over.
And so I imagine the gem industry is probably similar to that then.
Yeah,
I want to add a point to Tim's deal or the conversation in terms of America, what these companies think they're doing and perhaps are doing. It's just like you talked about with the Democratic Party and their immigration policy. They're playing a long game. And so the primary values, freedom and individualism, used to define America. That's what everybody wanted. I want freedom and I want to be individual, do what I want to do. They're trying to make diversity and inclusion the primary thing. And so they're appealing to people that believe in inclusion and who define their identity around how inclusive am I? Oh, I'm inclusive of trans folk, trans people. I'm inclusive of everything. And so that's what they're marketing. It's almost like marketing patriotism. And like the NFL and sports have sold themselves, this is the most patriotic thing you can do. Come to our game, stand for the national anthem, blah, blah, blah. Their inclusion now is like patriotism. And so these commercials are trying to hit the theme of inclusion because they think they've socially engineered Americans to believe there's nothing more American than being inclusive and tolerant and worshiping.
I wonder if there's a big ask element. I like inclusivity. I like diversity. I don't like equity. I think equity is a lie and a manipulation. But inclusivity, it's like, you know, if I'm playing a game of dodgeball and I see a kid who's out, you know, not hanging out with anybody, I'm the kind of person who's like, hey, dude, come over and hang out with us. Or I'm at a skate park and I see a kid who's by himself. I'd be like, yo, you want to come over and play a game of skate? Like, we're all chilling. And what's your name? And try and include people. And I like building community. I like diversity in the truest sense. I like diversity of worldview and opinion. And the original concept of diversity was that someone who comes from a different community will have a different perspective than you. Not always, but sometimes. And so you can learn a lot from people that you don't know. Don't assume that other people can't teach you something.
The problem with inclusivity is too much of it is a bad thing. In that, if you have I was kind of an outsider growing up, and I thought, you know, if I get popular, I'm never going to let someone be an outsider. I'm going to bring everyone in. And I tried that, and it became chaos. And you know it also as a chef. I'm an amateur cook, I'm a chef or whatever. But if you add every ingredient, it's a mess. You have to stop. You have to add specific ingredients. You use discretion when you're being inclusive. You have to. And that is a hard thing for people to accept because it does mean that people get left out. Mm. And that's a sad thing. But it may be stronger in the long run.
The issue now is that these three words, diversity, inclusivity, equity, have all just been perverted. Well, for one, equity is garbage. You know, equality I like. Equity is some kind of, you know, equality of outcome instead of opportunity. But inclusivity was supposed to be about compassion. Now it's about homogenization. And diversity was supposed to be about different worldviews. And now it's just about homogenization. So you're not getting any of these things in this woke religion.
And too much inclusivity, like you were saying earlier, is you get the fringes that come in and then end up disrupting the very group you're trying to build.
Yeah. And if you look at what people mean when they say, like, we're creating an inclusive environment, just to turn this on its head, it basically means the opposite in many contexts. Like when I was first, you know, when I was still in academia and I wrote a paper for the Wall Street Journal called The Dangerous Denial of Sex, and it was about why sex is real and why it matters, I was told that I was not making the environment at Penn State inclusive. And that therefore means I needed to go because I wasn't making an inclusive environment. So I needed to be excluded in order to make an environment inclusive. So it can mean just the opposite.
I want to do a semi-hard segue to this story from Fox News. Brooklyn subway shooting. Person of interest Frank James posted racist rants to YouTube for years. I do believe he got arrested. And what I've heard, and I think, you know, I'll throw to Jason to correct me if I'm wrong, is that this guy was posting, like, black nationalist stuff.
Yes. He's been radicalized by corporate media. We've been sending black people the message through corporate media that you're a victim, you're oppressed, white people are the devil, and this guy bought what the media was selling. He's from Milwaukee or Waukesha, same area as the Daryl Brooks guy who was radicalized. It's no one should be surprised that we're creating these types of monsters. Because the media is basically telling you're crazy if you don't think like this guy.
I got a story for you, Jason. Some people watch the show and have seen it, may have heard me, but I assume most people haven't heard the story. I know sometimes I tell stories, you know, several times, but there's different guests, so I apologize for it. But I knew a guy once, and I'll try and simplify the story for the sake of their privacy. There was a black dude and there was a white dude, and the black dude mentioned he was gonna, you know, go run to the store real quick. And the white dude said, hey, when you're out, can you mind, you know, when you're by the store, can you grab me a cheeseburger from the, you know, the McDonald's? And the guy said, excuse me? And he was like, would you mind grabbing me a cheeseburger when you're over there by the McDonald's? And they started yelling at him, like, what do you think? Who do you think I am? Later, I asked the guy, like, whoa, I saw you yelling. Like, what happened? And he's like, the dude he thinks I'm his boy. Like, I'm going to go and get him food. And then I was like, if you were going to the store, I figured he'd just ask you to pick him up a burger. And so that was, to me, I was kind of like, yo, I was like, I think you might be looking too much into this. And he said, you don't understand, man. You don't understand what they think about people like me. And then I was like, when I was growing up, it didn't matter what your race were. We'd be like, oh, hey, you're out. Hey, get me a hot dog and fries. Would you do it? We'd be like, sure. But I think what happens is you have people constantly saying, you know, it's like Ibram X. Kendi said, it's not a question of did racism happen. It's how did racism manifest? You'll have people who think it's everywhere and look for it. And I'm like, maybe he just wanted you to be his friend and, you know, do him a favor. Maybe he wasn't being racist. But if people internalize that and they constantly look for it, they might get offended where they shouldn't.
This goes all the way back to the feminization of America. Everything's about feelings. Women are driven by feelings more so than men. We've turned this entire society about, I feel like a woman, even though I have a penis. I feel like something was racist, even though that coach called a white guy MF-er, and that's his language of choice. Even though that same guy that asked to get a cheeseburger asked his white friend to get him a cheeseburger the week before. But if I feel like it was racist, it is. And we all seem to accept that standard.
No, I don't personally. But
growing up, you know, I had friends who would use racial slurs for all of us. And he wasn't racist. He was just, it was just edgy, young punk humor. We watched Family Guy in South Park. So he'd go around and we'd all laugh at it. He would, you know, call us names. I'm like, I don't care. Like, cause he's my friend and I know he's just trying to, you know, take jabs at me and it's funny. And he would call himself names too. But today's day and age, it's like, you can't belittle these ideas. When I look back on what it was like being a kid, having a friend who would call people names, it felt like he was taking the power away from it. He would say something that was ultimately meaningless to all of us and was meant in jest and kind of playfully, so we never got mad about it. Nowadays, they've empowered it so much that even asking someone to grab you a burger is like the epitome of racism, that it's everywhere, always. And it's not the right, it's the woke who claim they're anti-racist, who are funneling as much oxygen into those fires of racism as possible.
Yeah, I wonder, is it biological? Like, is it in the diet, in the plastics in the water, the microplastics and the...
It's a big leap.
All these chemicals, like, that are making people so tense and edgy that they can't, like, not get angry when they hear these things?
I think a lot of it's just sort of ideology going around. It's making people, you know, mentally ill in a way that they're
social
just...
Social media, man.
Yeah, it's a lot of it's social media, a lot of it's clicks. A lot of people are staying at home. They just don't have their friend circle. I mean, this is the stuff like Jonathan Haidt, Greg Lukianoff wrote about in Coddling the American Mind. Yeah, we're seeing all-time highs of sort of mental health issues, depression, sexlessness among young kids. Not young kids, well, college-aged people. Yeah. I'd hope sexlessness in young kids. But, yeah, I mean, it's there's this skyrocketing rates of mental health issues, and this is, I think we're seeing sort of a manifestation of a lot of that. We have this focus on these microaggressions. So when I was in graduate school, I remember hearing from this other grad student. It was a black woman, and she was talking about how she had this insane interaction that was very racist. She played Ultimate Frisbee, and we were like, well, what was this incident? And she had just started playing Ultimate Frisbee in this new league, but she was very athletic, and so she did really well on the first time that she played Ultimate Frisbee. And so some friends after the game came up to her. They had never met her before, and they said, man, you're so good at Ultimate Frisbee. Have you ever played before? And she was like, no. And then someone else said, well, that's just good genes. And she took that as being an instance of, you know, this microaggression because, oh, I'm black, I have these good genes. And I heard this story, I remember thinking, no, the first instinct was, have you ever played before? Have you practiced? Is that why you're so good? And she said, no. And then so, well, what's the other alternative? You're just have a predisposition. You're athletic.
You're a natural. Nature
and,
versus
and then
nurture.
So she dismissed the nurture part, the practice, because she had never practiced before. And then because the next available option was you're a natural athlete, that was racism. And I just remember thinking, like, this is completely insane.
Black people, Frank James, all we have been conditioned to believe the highest level of our existence is being a victim. And so we look. That's how you prove you're black. I'm a victim. And so for that woman to prove her blackness, she's on a college campus, I would imagine. Is that what
she was a grad student.
Grad student on a college campus. She's lived a very privileged life. There's probably black people that tease her. She talks too good of English. She's too smart, blah, blah, blah. And so her way of expressing her blackness, boy, you wouldn't believe the racist shit I went through. Oh, someone at Ultimate Frisbee said I was a natural. Boom. That's how she proves she's black.
You know, you want to know what's crazy? I experienced racism in my life. In fact, we had a guest on the show. I don't want to bring up his name. Let him keep his peace for the time being. And when I said, I understand your worries about racism, you know, my family dealt with some of this stuff. He said, no, you didn't. You're lying. You're a white boy. And I'm like, okay, so like, if I agree with you, now I'm wrong? I think a lot of it is just power. It is this fascistic ethos of there is no truth but power. This guy's clearly not on my side. He doesn't like what I have to say. So when I reach out and say, I understand that because I've experienced similar, it's denial and rejection. No, you are wrong. It couldn't have happened to you. And I'm like, that's just the weirdest thing to me. You try to relate to someone and say, I can understand your argument, and they basically spit in your face.
Yeah, if I was like, slap your microphone. I really like your skin color, man. You have really nice skin color. Like, I don't hear that compliment going around a lot, but you can compliment someone's bone structure. You got really nice cheekbones.
I was told this today. So I had to get makeup for the Daily Wire.
Oh, boy.
They do this thing where they're like, they're very polite about it. They go, would you want to do any touching up, any, you know, makeup? Because I got like a blemish here and there. And I was like, I'm good. I think it's fine. Like, you sure? Just a little bit? I mean, we can do it. It's no big deal. And I was like, if you guys think it's, I need it. They're like, oh, no, it's fine. We might as well, right? You know, they're trying to be polite about it. But
every camera needs a nail.
But you know what? You know what the makeup artists always say? Maybe it's just true for me. They say, you have great skin. No, I imagine they say it to everybody because they're doing makeup and they got to say that to you. And did I go, excuse me, what does that mean? Are you talking about the color? No. I'm just like, hey, okay, you know, whatever.
Let me ask y'all a difficult question. This is, I think, because it'd be difficult to be this transparent. But this is the Tim Pool show. You guys are really transparent. And Tim, I know you're not white per se, but do you have trepidation in dealing with black people you don't know because you anything you say can and will be potentially used against you? Does that thought cross your mind? You know, coming in and talking to me, it's like you watch my show, you know my reputation. Oh, I can be myself. It's Whitlock. But when you're dealing with perhaps someone black that you don't know, do you sit there and think like, oh my God, let me be very careful?
No, not after I see their eyes. We are the brain, eyeball, spinal cord creature holding moving these saltwater bodies around. You just look in the eyes, man. It's not that we're all the same. I used to say that a lot, but it's like, I don't even like all the color and the shape fades away when you're communicating with someone, and everybody appreciates it. That's been my ethos since I was like 14, at least since I was two.
You know,
but really when I was 26.
You know what it is for me? It's politics, not race.
Yeah.
When you know, there's that study, I think I was at a Yale, we talk about quite a bit, where conservatives speak to black people normally, but liberals like dumb down their language.
Yep.
Which is it's insane. I couldn't imagine doing that. And so, you know, for me, I'm like, I really just kind of talk to everybody the way I talk to everybody. I might have, I think it's fair to say there are certain assumptions we might make about people based on race, based on the politics of our environment. But I would say 99.9% is just like, I'm going to talk to this person the same way I talk to everybody else because I don't want to make assumptions about them.
Yeah, first especially based on we're race. Not different races. We're the same species, the Homo sapien. And I like talking to people with different ethnic backgrounds or like different genetic backgrounds because our ancestors lived in different environments. Like the Asian ancestry, maybe because the winds were so biting in the Mongolian plains, they squinted. And over generations, the babies were just born so they didn't have to squint, you know? Or people with darker skin than mine. Had a lot of sunlight. People with light skin like mine, their ancestors lived at night.
Everybody has darker skin.
My dad, one time, I was at the beach, yeah. And my dad was like, we lost Ian, where's Ian? They looked down the beach, they saw a glowing white thing.
Gosh.
And like, there he is. And he was right.
Here's what I think is important to understand, especially like when it comes to race. There's different physical characteristics. Say hair, for instance. There's different hair products for white and black people, or not even necessarily white and black, but, you know, there literally are different hair treatments and styles. So there's an assumption someone might make, but it shouldn't change. These things don't change the way you treat a human being's their soul, their spirit. I wonder about this because, you know, when we talk with people like Seamus of Freedom Tunes, for instance, and, you know, he very much believes in the soul and the body as being one. I'm like, is it something that people who don't believe in a soul will treat you like nothing but the body and ignore your inner, you know what I mean?
You know what I don't like?
They'll look at you and think your race is you instead of wondering about who you are as a person because you have a soul.
I don't like when I talk to people about people with dark skin, if I'm talking about the difference of light skin and dark skin, because it's relative to my skin color. And that's really rude of me to act like that. Like, I should be talking about people with light skin and just see it from other perspectives than me as, like, the zero point, as the starting point.
Well, let me... I don't know if you wanted to answer that, because I didn't want to...
No, I mean, I like to think I give people, you know, the first volley in a conversation, and it's going to be the same for just about everybody that I interact with. And, you know, over iterations, that's when I'll build a sort of a model.
But there's like a but light... Hold on, I want to throw the question back at you, Jason. Do you think you, or do you think black people, have a certain way of talking with white people in like a similar fashion you asked us?
In this culture today, no, I don't think there's any trepidation, any fear, because I think the culture has kind of said there are no standards for black behavior.
Have you seen the Ami Horowitz video on voter ID?
I think I have.
I didn't mean to interrupt you, so if you want to finish that thought real quick.
No, go ahead.
So, you know, they say voter ID is racist.
Yeah.
Classic video. I love bringing it up. So he goes to Berkeley and he asks these young white progressives, is voter ID racist? And what do they say? Of course. He says, why? He gets a few answers. Black people can't afford IDs. Black people don't know where the DMV is, and black people don't have the internet. So he goes to the Bronx. He goes to Harlem. Yeah. And he asks this woman, he's like, ma'am, he's a black woman. He's like, this might seem strange, but do you have an ID? And she goes, what? Like, I know it might seem strange. And she goes, of course I have an ID. He's like, okay. He asks a young black man. He's like, I know it might seem strange. Do you know anybody who doesn't have the internet? And he's like, what do you mean? 12-year-old kids know how to get the internet. We got it on our phone. But my favorite interaction is when he walks up to this like older black dude and he goes, do you know where the DMV is? He goes, yeah, it's right over on 25th. He's giving him directions. And I'm just like, for the media to push this narrative about black people, it's like, have you ever talked to a black person? The assumption that they're a different and foreign group of people to me is mind-boggling.
But
it plays right into that Yale study I was just talking about.
I don't like black and white. I don't like the words because, first of all, my skin's not white. It's like pinkish. Your skin's not black. It's like brown, red, you know? And like, historically, white magic is like healing magic and black magic is like dark arts, like blood magic. Hold on. Like, it's the stigmas attached to calling people black and white when we're not.
Hold on. I gotta push back because that is a woke argument where they're trying to claim that like Harry Potter and Magic the Gathering are racist.
Denigrate.
White and black is a reference to night and day.
Exactly.
It's not
and
racist.
When in the daytime you can see the predators coming and at night you can't. So there's this inherent like scariness to the dark night, you know? So like, I don't like that people use black and white. I don't like black. I mean, obviously,
I get where you're coming from.
Then
man.
Stop playing Magic the Gathering because black
Never.
And white magic.
I'm a white mage through and through, but that's just gonna like to heal people.
I get where you're coming from because it's like the word blackballed. Like, black has a negative connotation. And what you're arguing is like, Jason's not even black. Why are we calling him black? I'm not really white. I get that. But because we've established these cultural customs that we all somewhat adhere to, you know, we got to live in this reality.
Do we? I want to shatter that.
I agree. I think you're 100% right. That should be the goal. I think we should be literally trying to live up to Dr. King's dream, judge people by the content of the character. The left seems to be taking us the total opposite direction. And we now all have, again, what you're seeing with black people is that they interpret the world through this lens of race, every interaction. And it's like, hey man, some people just are having a bad day. It had nothing to do with your skin color. Their wife may have made them sleep on the couch last night, and so he's grumpy and gave you a cold answer. We ascribe anything that bad. If he punched me in the arm right now, I could, he only did that because I'm black. That may be his way of greeting everybody that he's friendly with or finds, you know, interesting or whatever. But we just describe race and some negative connotation to any experience we have.
There might be. We got to go to Super Chats.
Oh, I got a really good one, though, real quick.
We are way behind, so go quick.
Okay. Back in the day when we were all, like, hunting with spears and stuff, if I went out there with my glowing white light skin and I'm in the middle of the night and the moon's out, you're going to see me. But if someone with darker brown skin is going to be more, like, camouflaged, maybe racism comes from that.
Well, there's
or like fear or stuff comes from that.
It comes like, from the other, the fear of the other.
But it's actually harder to see darker objects at night.
It's true, but the racism is rooted in the idea of, I know you're not from my city. I know you're not from my town. I know you're not from my tribe. And
that for sure.
Otherism creates fear and tribalism. But we got to go to Super Chats. Sorry, Jason, because we are 10 minutes behind.
Tell me after the show.
So let's go to Super Chats. If you guys haven't already, smash that like button. I'm wondering if there's a lot of Super Chats from when the Daily Wire took over our broadcast, so that'll be fun. But we'll just see what you guys got. All right, Dr. Roller Gator in the house says, "Hi, Colin, this is Gator. You've been in Nashville for like 3 weeks. How are you still sober? Hashtag free Dr. Roller Gator."
I mean, I've been hitting up some of the bars around town, doing some moonshining and distilling and all kinds of stuff. So
we're going to.
I don't know if I can say I'm sober.
You come into Redneck Riviera.
I heard about that.
Saturday.
Yeah. I think we're going to be there from like 2 to 3, but I'm not sure. It might be like 2:30 to 3. Not as long as I thought, because everybody's very, very busy, and then we actually have to get on the road immediately. Yeah.
That was actually a big part of me coming to Nashville, is because I Googled craft distilleries when I was downtown visiting, and like 50 popped up, and I was like, okay, I'll move here.
Yeah, sounds good.
Right on. All right, let's read some more Super Chats. All right, Jace McNeil says, "Hey, Tim, watched the vlog today with the troubles of the camper. Would love to be your full-time truck trailer driver. There were problems? I did not see any of them.
The comments on the vlog are like, the first 11 minutes were hard to watch. I'm a truck driver. Hire me."
Well, all I know is I showed up in Nashville and the trailer was here because the crew took care of business. So I'm good. All right. Lior Engelstein says, "The latest Quinnipiac poll finds Joe Biden with a 26% approval rating among Hispanics, lower than his rating among whites, almost like people like laws." Yeah. I imagine a lot of the people who escaped communism, you know, don't like the idea of socialism, you know, the same.
For sure.
All right. Free Men Die Free says, "You still owe me Timcast IRL episode with Ron Paul. Luke said he can set it up. One of the most important figures alive to have on your show. I would be honored, and I would love to have Dr. Ron Paul on the show." Where's he based out of?
Texas, somewhere.
But Texas, somewhere.
I don't know. Somewhere in Texas. Texas. Yeah, he's
deep
down there.
In the heart of Texas, yeah, I believe.
Deep in the heart.
Yeah, that's my understanding. Oh.
I mean, yeah, we should absolutely figure it out. And, you know, he's an older guy, so we should probably, you know, get on that. I'm a big fan of Ron Paul. And there's this, I'll just put it that way. I love the idea of liberty. I've never agreed with him on everything because he does have more traditional views. But the idea of I will leave you alone is very appealing to me. So I'm like, you know, Ron Paul, I think it was Ron Paul who said, you can be a socialist in America. Just buy land and make your socialist little commune.
Yep.
Boom.
I'm like, yes, please. Mm-hmm. That's what I always tell people. Left libertarian is like, I'm going to buy a farm. Me and my friends are going to live on it. And we're going to share our fruits and vegetables together. That's it. You want to scale it up to a big city? Good luck. I don't see that happening. All right. Medic Knight says, "Tim, ask the Daily Wire crew if they're familiar with the Libertarian Party Mises Caucus. If so, they should have Dave Smith on their show to discuss debate ideas. Would love to see Dave versus Ben Shapiro." That is an amazing idea.
Yeah, that is.
And I think I feel like Ben would be absolutely up for
it. Let's do it.
And Dave is amazing as well. So I'll definitely ask him about that, because we're big fans of Dave and Michael Malice as well. I would love to see Michael Malice talk with Ben Shapiro. Wouldn't that be amazing?
Have they never had an interaction before?
I don't know. Maybe they did. Maybe they did.
Huh. Who is your ultimate guest wish list person? Who, if you could interview one person?
Oh, I don't know.
Ron Paul.
Ron Paul would be great. I already got
Joe Rogan.
Well, I mean, yeah, that's a little different. It's cool to have, like, the king of podcasting on your show, and he came in and hung out with Alex Jones, so that was a pretty epic moment. I don't know how you topped that, to be honest. Alex Jones and Joe Rogan came on this show at the same time? Mm-hmm. It's crazy.
Who's yours, Jason?
Man, that's a great question. I should have thought. I'll answer after he reads the next one. Let me think about that.
All right. Nick S. says, "I hope you got a high-speed camera so we can play back you and Ben at speed the human ear can pick up." someone, you know, just said, turn the speed down to 50% because we did a sit down with Ben Shapiro today. It'll be up on Sunday in a bonus Sunday episode of it'll be like, I think it's like an hour and 15-20 minutes long. So just, you know, half speed and you'll hear us talking like this. That's an interesting point, Ben.
I sound like Sam Harris.
Yeah. Otherwise, it's going to be like, well, but that's a really interesting point, but you got to understand what's going on in these colleges and these kids in these schools. We both talk very fast, so. I mentioned that to one of the crew guys, and they were like, oh, yeah.
I know who I want to interview. There's two people for different reasons. Barack Obama, because I'd like to challenge him on the way he handled the race issue. But probably the person I'm most fascinated with right now is Bill Maher, because I think he's been completely red-pilled and is just trying to ease his way up out of HBO once he can get his podcast up and rolling. And then he's going to tell, he's already telling us what he thinks, but I think eventually he's going to tell us what he really thinks.
You know, Bill Maher said in 2019, was it, bring on the recession, because he hated Trump so much that all the pain and suffering we see. I just, someone tweeted about it and I said, am I supposed to forgive that?
Yeah.
Am I supposed to? No.
I mean, probably.
No, no. I think he should be held to account about it.
Yeah, but still forgive.
And I think he should. I think, you know, I don't know if Joe mentioned this to him because he was on a show recently. But I mean, it's the first thing I'd say. I'd say, Bill, in 2019, you said bring on the recession. And so many people are suffering. People are at risk of losing their lives. People, I mean, and look in Shanghai how bad it is. Mm-hmm. You know, you wished this because you didn't like Trump. And now things are worse. So it's like, not only did you wish pain and suffering on people because you didn't like Donald Trump, maybe you were scared that I can get, but Biden is worse. He's objectively worse. So you wished for pain and suffering and you got an extended state of it. That's not okay, man.
Let me add one
point. That's a luxury belief.
Let me add one point to that, because I wanted to say it earlier when we were talking about your conversation with the Daily Wirecast about presidential candidates. This is why I'm of the opinion that Trump not running in 2024 might be a blessing, because when Trump's not in office, it makes the Democrats actually have to defend their positions rather than just saying Trump. You ask them any question, they just go Trump. And so once you take that off the table, that's why I think you're seeing Bill Maher pivot so much, because he can't just holler Trump like he used to.
So Harry Toe says, no audio. Someone is getting fired. Yeah, what happened with the audio? Was it?
I don't know the technics. Do you?
So I know a little bit about it, but I think the Daily Wire was sending us two channels that were canceling each other out when you were listening with headphones. So if you listen with headphones. Yeah, because we had people who were like, it's fine for me. I can't hear a thing at all. And everybody's like, okay, refresh the page or whatever. So Andy unplugged one cable and he made it all go away.
How long was the audio out for?
I'm not sure. It was a few
minutes
there at the beginning.
9 minutes.
It was like the first half, or first less than the first, little bit less. But if you go back and rewatch the show without headphones, you may be able to hear it.
Yeah, so now you know for sure. Like, that was the issue. We had two different, I forget what they're called. I think they're called two different channels. I'm probably explaining this wrong. I'm not the 80s.
But you guys
person.
In here heard everything like normal?
Yeah, we did. Crazy. We heard everything.
That's happened before. It's a weird thing I've seen happen before.
Yeah, it was funky.
Crazy how that happens.
But it did bring a lot more attention.
You know, we'll have to do? We'll have to, Benjamin said, everyone go to the Daily Wire live stream because you want
to.
But you know what we'll have to do is just if we have that glitch on our recorded version for the podcast, we'll have to just check for it, I guess.
Yeah, we'll see what's up there.
Well, you know, guys, someone said, how long was this planned for? And I was like, the entire time we were planning on coming out here.
Yeah.
Well, like a couple weeks before, I think. But when you get here and you're trying to duct tape everything together to be like, how can we pull this off? Because we need their feed to come to our trailer. We'd like run cables and do all this stuff. And these things happen.
It's truly magical. If you guys could see behind the scenes of the production capacity that went into it, it was...
Even with all the awesome Daily Wire tech people, it still required a lot of thinking. We practiced it 3 or 4 times beforehand, and it was quite the production.
You know, it's funny because you see us hanging out all chill, but man, there are people running around pointing.
It's crazy.
All right, let's see what we got. James just says, can we fix the audio?
Well, yes. We did.
Yes, we can. How long was I up there for?
It's like, my guess is 20 minutes, 18, and the audio was down for like maybe 8.
I was worried about you guys. I was like, I'd feel really bad if they keep me here really long. Like,
it was fun. We were listening. It was a really good conversation.
It was a good conversation.
Yeah, it was great.
RVD.
Didn't miss you at all.
No.
RVDL says, so is Daily Wire buying out Timcast? No. We are, Timcast.com is a very large company. It's relatively large. Timcast.com has around, what do we have, like 35 employees?
Oh, Timcast.
Yeah.
Timcast.com is the website.
Well, yeah, but Timcast in general, yeah. we're a big company. I mean, this trailer we're in is probably like a $200,000 rig.
I'm always telling Tim, man, hold on to your IP, bro. Take it to the top. But, you know,
we've got,
I think partnership's the key.
No investors. We've got no influence behind anything we do. I am but a single dude who started making YouTube videos and has continually, just every day I wake up, I put a brick down. And I think that's important. However, there may be certain deals, because we're talking about TV shows, and I don't know, you never know. It really comes down to, it would be very difficult for literally anyone to be able to buy out this company at this point, to be completely honest. But what we are mostly talking about with the guys over at Daily Wire is, you know, building culture. We do not have the capability to do movies, but we certainly have a bunch of crazy ideas for movies. They want to do movies. They like crazy ideas. And so I think that's where we're headed. We've got with Tales from the Inverted World and a bunch of other ideas, certainly things that might be of interest for them in terms of making content. So there might be something, you know, going on. We still have to talk about it. But I'm a big fan of the Daily Wire crew.
I heard you say something very similar to what Jeremy believes. I think you said it during this podcast, or maybe you said it to me before the show. If you're going to change culture, you got to be willing to create it. And that's what I like, what you're doing and what the Daily Wire is doing.
But not just that. So when we launched Pop Culture Crisis on YouTube, for everybody, go to youtube.com/popculturecrisis, subscribe if you're into pop culture content. So, you know, we had this conversation very much at the beginning of the show. I'm like, guys, it's not about politics. The headlines should not be like woke this, woke that, Democrat, Republican, with, you know, cultural stuff in there. It is literally a story where it's like Disney launches new Marvel show. And the reason is too many people are just like, let's launch our new version of cultural commentary where we make fun of what they're doing. And I'm like, okay, well, I mean, that's great. I don't care if, you know, watch all of these cultural commentary channels. We do that. What we need is cultural participation. We need people who share our values to be talking about the same thing that regular people are talking about, not approaching them like an other and complaining to their faces about it. So what happens is when Disney announces a new movie, the guys over Pop Culture Crisis will be like, here's the new movie, here's what's happening, here's what they think. Behind that is their values. So it's the way I see it is, the mistake the woke are making is that they're making movies and putting the message first. What the Daily Wire is doing is making movies and putting the message secondary. So you've got good entertainment, and then it just so happens to have a little bit here and there of, like, our values are behind it. That's what I'm talking about with Pop Culture Crisis. People can watch about new movies, celebrities, video games, and then secondary is, well, you guys know we believe in freedom and personal responsibility, but we're not slapping you over the head with it. So we can engage with the culture. The next step is making that culture. But we're not making Hollywood movies, so this is the slow roll we're doing.
We're making Nashville movies now, baby.
I mean, yeah, hopefully. Richard says, I wouldn't be surprised if YouTube ruined the audio on purpose. Uh-huh. We're talking about people who are furious they can't groom kids. What's cutting an audio feed? Either way, this is better than the Avengers. It was really fun because I said that in the title, Ben Shapiro and the Daily Wire crew takes over. People may have missed it, but when I walked in, I straight up just said that to everybody. I was like, yeah, I just titled it that Ben Shapiro was taking it over because he's the most famous guy in the room, and everybody laughed. And but then I was like, thank you all for joining on my show. Yeah, it was fun. But you guys heard all that. No,
we heard it, the audience.
Yes.
Half the audience heard it or something.
That sucks.
Maybe more than half.
We'll get it right the next time we do it, because that was a whole lot of fun. We were lucky enough to be here while they were doing Backstage Live.
They, like, run in and pin that mic on your chest. That was awesome.
You're like watching me run up and do all that stuff?
Yeah, that's great.
That's so cool. Well, you know what? The audio, oh, man. That means, because I was talking while I was going in there, and that's only on our end.
Oh, that was good. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Adrian Contreras says, if Crowder shows up out of nowhere, I will probably have an accident. I think, you know, we've got an event being planned in New York now that they've lifted the mandates and stuff. Maybe. It might be too soon, but I would love to have, you know, an Avengers moment. Just get independent media people to come and just, you know, what do we got to do to pack the Madison Square Garden stadium?
Talk about it like five times on this show. It's going to sell out fast, dude. But, it's 2,800 seats.
No, I'm talking about the 60,000 seats.
Oh.
Yeah, what do we got to do to make that happen?
2 months of publicity?
I mean, I got to be honest. If the Daily Wire, Timcast, Crowder, Rubin, and maybe Rogan, you know, he's not necessarily in the same space, but if he's booked for it,
Dave Chappelle,
willing.
If we could get Joe,
I mean,
and
now
Dave.
We're reaching. Yeah, I think Dave would sell the stadium on his own.
Yeah.
But I think if everybody's promoting it, we could do a big event.
I think there's a big
like want for that stuff. Remember before the pandemic, they were having these conversations between like Sam Harris and Jordan Peterson. They're selling out fairly large venues. I mean, I think they're that really hasn't been rebooted since then too. Like I think there's still potential for that for sure.
Kurt Crystal says top 10 Timcast IRL moments. You know, when they told me they wanted to, they were like, how can we have you jump feeds to Daily Wire? I was like, man, we'll need a remote camera. It'll have to be like here, plugged in advance. We'll need a way to switch it into our system. I was like, that sounds tough, especially the last minute. And the crew made it happen.
Yeah.
A lot of hard work, a lot of testing.
Great teamwork between
Well, I guess there was an audio issue, but, you know.
Yeah. Incredible.
All right. Nanad Srejic says, what's up, Hassan Stans in the chat? Glad you decided to listen to an intelligent conversation for once. You know, I'll point this out because this is also the conversation that we all had with Ben Shapiro. It will be up on Sunday, as I mentioned. Why is it that it's always the right, as the left describes it? That is like, our door is always open to all people, including the left, to have a conversation, but it's always the left saying, no, they won't do it.
Yeah. I had that recently. Scientific American did a hit piece on one of my articles saying that sex is real. And I'm trying to be as polite as possible. I reached out to the editor, you know, just saying, like, we should have a platform. We should have a conversation about this. And then now she's tweeting today about how she's just getting trolled by me, apparently. So
yeah, this middle-aged, or I guess old, comedian woman gave an interview. And it's the weirdest interview because it shouldn't exist because this lady's not relevant. She's not relevant to the point where I'm not going to say her name. But she was like, whenever I speak up, the Joe Rogan army comes for me. Ugh, the Tim Pool army comes for me. And I'm like, what? The Tim Pool army comes for you? What are you talking about, lady? I never talk about you. You know, I'm sure people know who I'm talking about, but I'm not going to say her name because I don't
relevant.
Care about her. Right. But it's funny how they lie and stuff. All right. ELA says, I love how independent media supports each other. You all talk about the importance of decentralization, and it's awesome how you're all building each other up instead of trying to knock each other down, walking the walk. Well, because I think one of the thing that actually unifies, despite the differences in politics between the Daily Wire, us at Timcast, or Steven Crowder, is that we agree to disagree. We respect the disagreement, and we're arguing, and it's fun. But the left is like, I'm not going to come on your show and talk to you. Mm. They just want to hide behind their screens and, you know, engage in sophistry.
Well, it's rare that I disagree with someone 100%. So even when you were talking about, you know, your Christian perspective and I'm, you know, a card-carrying atheist, there's truth to what you're saying about, you know, gay marriage and things like that and, you know, slippery slope stuff. So it's just like finding those areas, like what is the truth in what you're saying? What can we work with? How do we overlap?
I think there are
the
people
common humanity, really,
that are searching for truth, and there are people promoting an agenda. And if you're searching for truth, you'll talk to anybody, because who knows, that person may have some piece of truth that you're not aware of. If you're promoting an agenda, you're going to stay away from certain people.
Scott Knowlton says, Tim, you should relocate to Nashville, make Nashville the conservative Hollywood.
I think
one of the big things conservatives have going for it is that post-liberals are basically conservatives now. Like, look at this guy, Ian.
What
can,
up?
Can we get Ian? Look at him. Look at
Hi,
him.
Everyone. Look. I think of myself as neutral. I be neutral? Just like centralized and neutral?
But think about what you were saying about how you didn't like white and black, you know, magic, because it's like a negative reference. I mean, that's a pretty liberal statement. But when we have conversations, you can disagree on certain ideas. But what we do agree on for the most part between the Daily Wire and us is a story true or false? Were the Covington kids being racist? No, they weren't. But the left thinks they were, and that's what makes them left.
There's times for every human to be liberal, and there's times for everybody to be conservative. And then if you start labeling yourself, I'm a big C, this thing, just that's identity politics. Don't worry so much about that.
Boxes you in from the truth. Away from the truth.
Yep. The distinction between left and right is truth and fiction. The left keeps falling for every hoax. The right challenges these stories and then turns out to be right most of the time. So I think when people say we should move to Nashville to make a conservative Hollywood, I'm like, I mean, look, conservatives don't think we're conservative. You take a look at me walking into the Daily Wire HQ, and I even mentioned, I'm like, look how I'm dressed compared to everybody else here. I think, you know, we might have come from different worlds a little bit. I'm wearing sneakers, jeans, and a T-shirt, and they're all dressed very well. You know, I go in there.
Especially
and
Michael Knowles.
Oh, absolutely. And I, you know, they're not uptight people. They just dress, you know, for
uptight
business. Well, they're suits, right? And so I'm like, they're suits, we're street. We're, you know, but if we can agree on the basic facts, the conversation can exist. We can disagree on certain things, but we agree on what reality is. So if we came to Nashville, the big advantage that that the right has right now, conservatives have, is there are many people like me. I know a lot of pro skateboarders who they message me periodically. They're like, love your show. We're big fans. We agree. Because we don't like what's happening with the authoritarian cancel culture. People do not want to live in fear that someone's going to try and destroy their life.
Let's move to Nashville. Let's get a studio like an hour out of town.
Where you just put this big investment into Freedomistan. And Nashville's ridiculously expensive.
Like an hour out of town. That's kind of far. 40 minutes out of town.
We're 9.5 hours away.
I love Nashville. Dude, Nashville, the birds chirp all night in Nashville.
It's true, and
the
it's birds, weird.
What is up? The music city.
I don't know. It's
there's
so
something in the air, man. There's electricity in this area.
Everybody's singing, man. All right. Yoda Thrash says, whenever Jason is on, it's total worlds collide for me. Ooh. It's the old school BMXer guy who wants to talk street spots with Tim, but then football guy that wants to talk to Jason about zone coverage versus man-to-man.
Is there a time and a place for zone and man, or do you pick one or the other?
There's a time and a place for both.
All right. Let's grab some more. Let's see. We got so many. Brian Beatty says, Twitter just suspended libs of TikTok. Is that true?
That is true.
Oh, wow.
Yep.
That is.
Holy cow. That is big.
I am offended. Yeah. I am offended, Twitter.
Yeah. For what?
Where's Elon Musk?
He hasn't tweeted in days.
Yeah.
Well, there was that thing that Twitter had, like the new policy they put in. I think it was maybe even a year ago, where it's just like if they're posting people in like public spaces, and everyone always said this could be something that they might use to then just be able to remove accounts for violating sort of these types of things. This could be that coming to roost.
So we got some super chats. I think there was a sound cancellation thing happening.
Yeah,
so
that's what I'm talking about.
It's happened to me before.
Yeah.
So I once did a Skype with somebody, and for some reason we couldn't get the audio to work. And then I can't remember exactly what the issue was, but it was something like this. Orange Red says the sound worked with headphones.
Right.
My audio worked the entire time, missed nothing.
Yep.
I'm wondering what that was all about, that some people weren't getting it, some people were.
It was a cancellation, so it was like, I want to say two different channels that are operating at the exact opposite frequencies,
yeah,
which cancels out noise if you're listening with headphones, not if you're listening.
Well, Orange Red says they were listening with headphones.
Interesting. Yeah. I don't know.
Something like this happened to me before. It's weird.
Oh, hey, I wanted to say, too, that libs of TikTok was suspended by Twitter over, quote, hateful conduct. So I'm really curious if Elon Musk has anything to say
that
about
is
this.
So vague.
It is vague. So darn vague.
All right, let's see. We'll just grab a couple more here. Fammy Whammy says, love your show. Please limit Ian's weed intake beforehand.
Never.
Believe it or not, Ian does not smoke weed. I've never seen him smoke weed.
No. I would like you to see me smoke weed someday, though.
Someone mentioned that Joe took down the Bill Maher episode. Is that true? That sounds true.
Ooh, I don't know.
No?
I guess we can check that site.
All right, let's just grab one more. Here we go. Sparrow Rose says, tonight is extra special to me. Love Jason and Colin. And then someone says we need an audio person. You know, yeah.
We have so many audio people working on that.
I know. I think we've got an amazing rig. Everything was tested 3 times, and we have the entire Daily Wire production crew making this happen, and then these things happen. Mm-hmm. Isn't that crazy? I was worried about it. I was like, something's going to go wrong, isn't it?
Yeah, space travel's amazing that they can do that. They can send a spacecraft to Mars and everyone lives. Well, the moon.
All things considered, it went well.
Yeah. Well, I think, you know, it's weird that a lot of people are saying it was fine, and some people are saying it wasn't, but we'll get it sorted for the podcast version.
Yeah, we'll figure it out.
And for the segments, too, we'll get it fixed. But everybody, if you haven't already, smash that like button, subscribe to the channel, share the show with your friends. Today was awesome.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to have a special members-only show coming up at 11 p.m. Eastern, so that will be up at timcast.com for members only, because as members, I want you to realize something. CNN Plus reportedly only has 10,000 daily users.
Ooh.
That means we are bigger than them.
Mm-hmm.
That means when you are a member of TimCast.com, you are part of an elite group of people that is better than CNN. I know, you don't need to be a member to be better than CNN. It's not hard to do, but at least you can be a card-carrying member that is better than CNN. So, no, I got to say, in all seriousness, I am so grateful, honored that you would be members of TimCast.com to the point where I can tweet TimCast.com is bigger than CNN Plus. Because it's kind of just like, I despise the corporate press, the manipulation so much. To know that there is something bubbling up that just believes in honesty and to the best of our abilities, it makes me feel good. So everybody, thanks so much for all your support. Smash the like button. You can follow us at TimCastIRL. You can follow me at TimCast. Jason, do you want to shout anything out?
I do. I got to go to the bathroom.
Yes.
My phone went dead.
Oh, man.
I'm 54 years old. I haven't peed in 5 hours.
Oh, no. Yes.
Give it to me straight.
It's time for me to pee, but thank you so much for having
Jason,
me.
Jason, a hero.
And please check me out at Fearless, Fearless with Jason Whitlock at Blaze TV and everywhere podcasts are.
Awesome. Right on, man. Thanks for coming. We appreciate it. Colin, yeah, you want to shout anything out?
Yeah, you can follow me on Twitter at SwipeRight. That's WRIGHT. And check out my website, realitieslaststand.com, for good commentary on sex and gender.
Right on.
Nice. Ian Crossland here. Love you guys. Love you guys. Thank you so much for coming. That was great. Hopefully do it again soon.
Yeah.
Sooner or later, whatever. Do it again.
Anytime you're in Nashville, hit me up.
Yeah, baby.
Thank you guys all for tuning in on this super fun night and for bearing with our sound issues. I will try to fix those. I'm sure we'll have no issue with it. You guys may follow me on Twitter and minds.com at sourpatchlids as well as sourpatchlids.me.
We will see you all over at timcast.com in just about an hour. Thanks for hanging out.
Bye, guys.